This is Batman. Comic Timing is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network. It's what it does, because I'm Batman.
Welcome to episode 116 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as a rotating panel of guests and myself, Ian Levinstein, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. It's a Christmas miracle! An episode of Comic Timing is actually being released! Sean Pryor, formerly of PKD Media and now of Action Lab Entertainment, explains all about what Action Lab is while Raph sits in because at the time he was homeless. We also discuss our Mount Rushmore of comics. Here now, Comic Timing. Hey there, folks. My name is Ian Levinstein, and welcome to episode 116 of Comic Timing. Brent Cassina is busy now, so you will not hear his dulcet tones on this episode. You will, however, hear Mr. Raph Suhu live in studio here because he doesn't have a home.
I have no home.
Yeah. So how'd you avoid getting charburned?
I was at work.
And things would have turned out a lot differently had that happened, huh?
Yes, indeed you do.
Yeah, all right. So he's not Two-Face. He's just Raph.
I'm Three-Face?
Yeah, that's it. And we're also joined this episode for the first time in a while here on Comic Timing by Mr. Action Labs, Mr. Sean Pryor joining us here. Yo, Sean.
Hey, Ian. What's up? Hey, what's up, Raph? How y'all doing this evening?
Doing good, man. Doing good. Having a nice relaxing time after being in the city, seeing a horrible, horrible play in the Times Square area today.
Which play was that?
It was they did a play version of Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, the movie from the, I believe, the late 70s, early 80s, and they made a musical out of it, and it ain't good.
So, you know, you just could have came to my house and watched Black Man on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, and so, you'd have saved some money and been happy.
The chorus of every song was, oh, God, no, no, oh, God, no.
You know, you don't actually know how right you are, Raph.
I'm Nostradamus. What can I say?
Yeah, Nostradamus. That's totally his name. Well, yeah, you have been close to it to a nervous breakdown because you've been working like 25/8 the past couple of weeks.
Oh, you damn straight. You know, getting stuff up and you know, helping to get stuff up and running with Action Lab Entertainment, and you know, passing along stuff for PKD. I've just been on my grind, and right now it's all about Action Lab Entertainment right now. So just trying to continue to get the good word out. So thank you for having me on the show tonight.
You're welcome.
Plus, I get to talk with Comic Books Larry King.
Well, thank you very much there, Mr. Sean Pryor. Now, the first question I have to ask you is, what's it like being a black man in the comic book industry? Do you feel ostracized because the comic book industry is run by Jews like Stanley Lieber?
You know, I'm just going to pass on that question right now.
So can I be Rick Sanchez and say that the all the Jews in power in comic books are killing it?
Yeah, that's exactly what the truth right there.
And I'm gonna get fired from my podcast, and then just
you just want nobody to listen to this podcast, do you? Right?
I don't. No one listens.
Well, that would be like, you know, three less people that listen to it already. So that's fine by me, man. And this episode of Comic Timing is sponsored, as always, by Discount Comic Book Service, DCBService.com. Absolutely amazing discounts this month and for the near future at DCBS. And starting with the independent pick, and this is our review corner pick, it's only 99 cents for Garth Ennis's Jennifer Blood number one. It's a brand new series by Garth Ennis, and not only is issue one 75% off, but issue two is going to be 75% off, and issues three through four will be 50% off. So everything is going to be incredibly discounted on this new series here. Adriano Batista is on art. It looks like it's going to be pretty damn cool. Jennifer Blood is a suburban wife and mom by day and a ruthless vigilante by night. And just by that description alone, I want to read this thing. 99 cents, regular price of $3.99. Over at DC, Young Justice number one is our DC pick, as it is the start of the Young Justice cartoon, and along with it, a new comic book related to that cartoon, written by Art and Franco of Tiny Titans. So now they're going to be writing technically two Titans books, Young Justice and Tiny Titans, so good for them. And cover and art by our man and yours, Mr. Mike Norton. And 50% off here for $1.49. And it looks like it's going to be a Superboy story, so I'm happy about that. And over at Marvel, the very weirdly numbered Invincible Iron Man 500.1. This is 50% off for $1.49, regular price of $2.99. Written by Matt Fraction with art by Salvador Larroca. It looks like a regular issue of Iron Man, only it's $2.99 and it's a jumping on point, I guess. I don't know. I was really confused about this when they announced it, so that's why I picked it, because I'm like, okay, this is supposed to be a jumping on point for people. Let's see if it actually pulls off what it's supposed to do here with this 0.1 number scheme, whether or not that continues after the fact. So yeah, 50% off for $1.49 here at DCBS, and make sure to use the promo code CT8 to get an additional 8% off on your first order with Discount Comic Book Service. They're great, and I hope everyone at DCBS has a wonderful holiday season. And don't forget, everything from the big two, that's $2.99, is at least 45% off this month. So that's going to be damn good, continuing that from last month here in the month of December. So DCBService.com, go ahead and check it out, and we thank you so much for supporting Comic Timing.
But no.
We need people to listen to this episode because they need to know about Sean Pryor's newest venture. And we will start it off with. So how did this all come together? How did you first get the action going?
Okay, well, I wasn't the one that spearheaded the Action Lab Entertainment movement. Originally, what happened was Sean Gabron from Angry Gnome Comics, who specializes in horror comic books and OGNs and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Was working on an entirely different project. He's working on a superhero project.
Okay.
And he had Chad Ciccone, who was doing artwork for Mercury and the Murd. He had him working on the sequentials for it. Mm-hmm. So they were talking with Dave DeWatch one day. And, Dave saw the premise, saw the concept, saw some of the pages and artwork and spec work and all this stuff. And he was really impressed by it. So they started talking that maybe, they should combine their efforts to form a company. Mm-hmm. In order to, basically have a nice line of quality control in order to put out the best comic books possible, because the concept and the idea for the comic, which is called Fracture, is something that's good enough to be out on the direct market.
Right.
So that was where Action Lab Entertainment was formed. And then when that started, the guys, gave me a buzz, and they asked me to hop on board as president of Action Lab Entertainment. For a few reasons. One, I was doing my thing with PKD Media. And two, they understand my love of comics and how I like to, bring that forward to the people, whether you've been reading comics for 50 years or whether you've been reading them for one or never have read a comic before. I want to spread that joy of comics to everybody. And at the same time, this is a business operation. I had to learn how to write a business plan. I had to, I'm learning all the quote-unquote professional things of actually running a company, as opposed to PKD Media, which is kind of just like, it was off the cuff.
Right.
Everything was pretty much done off the cuff. But we wanted to combine our efforts to put out the best books possible, because between myself and Sean Gabron, Dave and Chad, we've got over 20 years of experience. Mm-hmm. So why not put all that together to put out the best comic books possible? And that's how it all started. So that is why Action Lab Entertainment has come to be. And see, also that way, by us doing this, there's no issue of, well, if somebody had a book, if somebody had a comic they wanted to put out, what label will we put it under?
Right.
Would it go over to PKD Media, or would it go over to Big Monster Productions? Mm-hmm. Would it go over to Angry Gnome Comics? No, that kills all of that. We have our own label specifically for these types of things. And we've got a plan together for at least the next 3 years of books that we want to put out. Mm-hmm. And so this is the reason why we're together. We're out here to put out the best comics possible. There are other things that we want to do, but right now the main focus is getting Fracture up and running. And that's why we've got a Kickstarter project for Fracture as we speak.
Yeah, and you don't want to run into a problem like when Image and Top Cow were buddies for a while there, and you know, like things would be a Top Cow book, but technically under Image, but technically under Top Cow. It'd be hard to tell, like sometimes where they fall and who is, you know, who is helping distribute who, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
and you sort of avoid that by just having Action Labs be its own thing, as opposed to just an Action Labs production.
Right. Now, that's the one main thing about Action Lab Entertainment that we wanted to do. We wanted to be together, but we never wanted to question who's it under. You know, who is this going to be under? As Action Lab Entertainment, it's all of us. So, you know, the company and the comics either succeed or fail. You know, and it's all on us. And we're going to be successful because we're putting that work in.
Yeah, and hopefully it'll show right there, because you know when you put hard work into anything, you get response, man.
Oh yeah, oh, most definitely. Well, I'll also look at it like this: there's been a major room for growth over the past year. I mean, for me doing my thing, Dave doing his thing, Chad doing his thing, and Sean Gabron doing his thing. We've all grown within the past 2 years in making comics, honestly. And there's always room for improvement, but the nice thing, going back to what I said a little bit earlier, we have more of a quality control factor now lined up when we make comics.
Right.
You know, like Dave. Excuse me. This is the last season. This is what happens when you drink beer before you podcast. No. In all seriousness, see, Dave DeWine serves as our creative director. So if anybody has a book, artistically, he's going to look over the art and he's going to push you for the best artistic story possible.
He's going to DeWine-inate it.
Yes, he's going to DeWine-inate it, damn straight. And
the pencils, give them to me now.
and with Sean Gabron as editor in chief, you know, he's going to look over scripts. If there are issues with scripts, you know, he's going to tell you, you know, we need to look at this. We need to switch this up and possibly change this up. So we're going to get the best out of everybody. When we're doing things separately, we still want to, you know, do our best. But when you're by yourself, you're serving as publisher, editor, you know, everything under the sun. But when you're together and you only have one or two specific tasks, that's going to lead for a better, you know, just better creativity and better comic books.
Mm-hmm. Now with this, I mean, obviously you got to start off small when you're starting a new company. So for now, you're keeping it in the family mainly, the guys behind Action Labs, and then perhaps from there branching out to new people.
Yeah, the first year is all about survival, first and foremost, you know, because like we're trying to run this as a business, you know. So the first year, we've got to survive.
Right.
And we already have a 2011 product line ready to roll. Mm-hmm. And what we've done is, because the direct market is so shaky, especially for independent companies, you know, we know that there are only a certain number of books that we want to try on the direct market. And everything else is going to fall under a market that we call the Signature Series line. Mm-hmm. So Action Lab has two different lines. There's a Signature Series line, which is like OGN, you know, original graphic novels that will be available on the digital market and available for solicitation on discountcomicbookservice.com. Mm-hmm. And they'll have a set run. Like say for instance, between 300 to 500 copies, and more than likely they'll be signed. They'll officially be signed by like the creative team. Mm-hmm. And we'll have a series of those that come out through the year, and those will also be out on digital markets as well.
Right.
And with the direct market, we'll have some books out as well on the direct market, which will also be in the digital market. But the nice thing about the Signature Series line allows us to flex. That niche market, or flex books that say, for instance, the direct market might not want to take a chance on. And I don't mean that in a bad way,
right.
but sometimes you want to artistically put something out there and it may not appeal to everybody, but at the same time, you don't know. And with the direct market, it's such a financial risk to constantly put books out there. So this is more of a safer way to get the books in the hands of people and at the same time not lose money.
Yeah, and I mean, you know from experience that getting stuff into Diamond can sometimes be a ginormous pain in the rump.
Yeah, yeah. See, and then that's also the nice thing about the way things are with Action Lab is that we actually have people that have dealt with the direct market before. Dave DeWanch has dealt with the direct market a number of times, whether it be with Gnome, which was published through Super Real Graphics, mm-hmm. or Special Education. which was published a couple of years back. He's got direct market experience, so he knows how to deal with the direct market and deal with Diamond better than I do. So, you know, we've kind of, I don't want to say we've got that in, but at least we know what we need to do now.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, going back to what I said earlier, again, it helps to have people with experience in any realm.
Oh, yeah.
And especially with getting your book solicited. I mean, as much as people like to say that it's a multiple team game out there when it comes to distribution, it is still mostly a monopoly. But with digital distribution and with the indie guys, you know, getting all their ducks in a row to hopefully make something that would perhaps be on a smaller scale than what Diamond is doing, but still be a form of distribution. Maybe we'll get to a point where it is no longer a monopoly, and guys like Action Labs, like BKD Media and stuff like that, will be able to have a distribution market outside of just Diamond. But for now, it's good to have people with experience in Diamond.
Free parking.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Exactly. And the other thing to look at, too, is that we are serious on pushing the digital market side, too.
Right.
Because we know that is where we're going to make the majority of our income.
Mm-hmm.
From comics is on the digital market. Now,
apparently that's where Marvel makes most of their money too, according to Marvel.
Lies.
Oh, and you know what? If that's true, that's awesome. So that means they can put out $2.99 comics, right?
Oh, totally. Yeah, yeah. In fact, they're just going to put out 99 cent comics now from now on. I don't know if you heard. Oh, wait, never mind. They're $4.99.
You know what? You need to stop. You need to stop. But like with us, the way the digital market's going to work with us, for the bigger companies like the Comixologies and things like that, mm-hmm. when you're an indie publisher, now granted, if you're solicited through Diamond for a certain book, you might have a little bit more pull. But if you're not, like certain books that or certain comics that might come out, what we've seen with some indie publishers that have been on Comixology and bigger outlets like Graphic LY, their first issue of their comic is free. So then the second issue, you know, so the second issue, then they'll actually have to pay for it, you know, which is cool. And I understand why they do that. But at the same time, that's hurting a publisher's pocket.
Right.
So the nice thing is that we're going to try to hit as many digital markets as possible. But we also understand the calculated, and I don't want to call it a calculated risk, but we understand the digital business from the fact that when we deal with the bigger digital distributors, we may not be able to make money off that first issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the only thing we can hope for are like the most downloads possible in order to entice people, hopefully people will be enticed to come back and buy the second issue, which will be reasonably priced.
Yeah, it's more of a long-term thing than anything.
Right. But once we get in the door, and then we'll have like our original graphic novels as well, the signature series line in the digital market too, you know, that's another source of income as well. So from the looks of things, I think we're going to have about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, between 8 books come out next year.
Okay. Yeah, well, it's like going to a dessert shop, finding out that the first cookie is free, and then, ooh, this cookie is delicious. I must purchase cookies. Because when you're in a dessert shop, you're going to buy some goddamn cookies.
Exactly.
You are giving them the cookie for free.
Yes, we are. Well, and like I said, it all depends. It all depends. The game might change. The game might change the beginning of 2011. You know, who knows? But, you know, we are already working on trying to get with the Comixologies, the Graphic LYs, the Drive-Thru Comics, MyDigitalComics.com, all that stuff for the digital side. We want to be in as many markets as possible and touch as many computers, iPads, iPhones, and electronic devices as possible, because that's where we're going to make a majority of our money.
Right.
Ooh, baby.
And the eventual microchip inside of people's heads.
Yes, one day.
Suhu, you got any questions for Mr. Pryor?
Mr. President, what do you think about the notion that you're disconnected from your audience?
Oh, wait, wrong black president?
Yeah, wrong black president.
Okay.
Sorry.
well, I mean, so we've been talking about your new venture. What about your old venture? What's going to go on with PKD Media? I mean, I know you've said that you're still going to continue it, and it's not going to stop. But I mean, what are you thinking about doing with PKD now?
Well, the way it's going with PKD, what I've decided to do, because all the stuff that's going on with Action Lab, I can't be working with PKD Media full time. I just can't. It's impossible. That would be two full time jobs on top of my full time job, and then throw a marriage on top of that. And it's just like, you know what? I just might as well just kick myself out of my own house.
Can't you just create a Scarlet Pryor?
That would be kind of cool, though.
But, dance with me.
Name him. What's your mother's maiden name? He could go by that as his last name, and whatever the name of your uncle's first name, you can go with that for his first name.
Oh boy, we won't get into that. We won't get into that. But what I've decided to do is I left PKD Media in good hands. I'm still part of PKD Media, but only as an editorial consultant. Mm-hmm. PKD Media is now run by Jason Grice. Jason Grice serves as a manager of operations. Jason Grice used to do marketing on like the West Coast for PKD Media. He was able to help implement to get PKD Media comics in a bunch of comic book stores out in Las Vegas.
Sweet.
And we also were a participant in Free Comic Book Day out in Las Vegas. So that was really cool. But he's the everyday operations guy and our publisher. We also have a publisher at PKD Media, Johnny M.
Johnny!
You may know Johnny M. from his podcast work on Legion of Dudes. He's currently writing a webcomic that will come out on PKDmedia.com next year that Dean Stahl is doing the artwork for. But he will be serving as publisher. His job is to get PKD Media comics in various places. And it's both their jobs to help give PKD Media a direction for the next year.
You don't actually kid with the Stan Leroy moniker, because you're totally following Stan Lee's like career path here. You know, he goes from like in charge of Marvel Comics to being like the editorial man in the background and helping out when he can while doing his own ventures.
Yeah,
Ian. Sean here is trying to make a name in the comic book industry, and he's doing everything he can. Excelsior, Sean.
Thank you, Stan Lee. Yes.
Thank you.
Where's my $15,000, kid? Give it to me now. I'm an old man. I need all the money I can get. Jesus, the Messiah.
But no, it's kind of funny that you mentioned that, though, because that's the way definitely the way it looks from a standpoint. It's just that I know I have my hands in like a lot of pots right now, but I always want to make clear that Action Lab is the main focus.
Right.
And the thing is, like, it's hard. It was really hard for me to like let go of like a majority of PKD Media. It was real hard because that's my baby.
Yeah.
You know, built that from the ground up with myself and DeWanch and Chad Ciccone and everybody else that's like helped put books together. And so, like, you know, it's real hard to kind of like let things go, but I still have involvement, just not as much as I would like. Perfect example, if I was trying to run Action Lab and PKD Media at once, there would be no Mercury in the Murd Volume 2 next year.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't have happened. So what I did was, like, I got in touch with Mike Imboden from Fist of Justice, and I asked Mike if he'd be willing to write Volume 2 of Mercury in the Murd. And to which he said, yeah, he was excited about it. So I was like, well, cool. So, and he also knew of an artist that he wanted to work with, a gentleman by the name of Ryan Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, they are working on Volume 2, and it is going to be out and debut at Super Show. So, you know, I'm really excited about that.
Well, I'm glad to see that Dr. Levenstein will live on. That's great, yeah.
Yes, he will. Yes, he will. And what I did was I provided all the plots for Volume 2.
Okay,
I said,
cool.
I said, Mike, here's the plot lines. This is what we're trying to do. And Mike banged out some great scripts. And to be honest with you, I think he knew the characters at spots better than I did.
Wow.
So that's a credit to his writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I give him a lot of props because he really, really worked his butt off.
Well, Mike's got plenty of experience.
Yeah, yes, he does. Yes, he does. I think Fist of Justice is a great comic book. And so, you know, and it needs to be out there. It needs to be seen, and there needs to be more Fist of Justice. And if I have my way, that's going to happen.
Nice. Very nice. Very nice. That's good to know. Yeah, and Mike's a cool dude too. I mean, come on. We all know from the absolutely insane two super shows ago, Comic Timing recording that man's got a lot on his mind.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. But no, he's a very talented man. He's a hell of a writer, and I'm glad that he's part of the PKD family. But yeah, man, it's a good thing, man. But I'm just really stoked about what we're trying to do here at Action Lab Entertainment, and I've never been so excited to be part of something and actually asked to be a part of something. And we've got a lot to prove to people. Like right now, I'm hustling to help raise money for our Kickstarter fundraiser so we can print and publish Fracture Issue 1. And I'm on my grind. I mean, I will be, doing more guest appearances than Snoop Dogg did on people's CDs in the 90s, okay?
Oh, my God.
Sean, there's not enough time in the month to do that.
Yeah, please, man.
I got to find a way because I have to make everyone believe in what we're doing is legitimate, what we're doing is great, and to ask them to please donate because we want to prove that we're just as good as anybody else out there, if not better.
Hey, Sean, how are you next to me and on Skype at the same time? What are you doing here, Sean? Wow. I mean, you really are everywhere.
Yes, I'm like Ghost Dad, sir. I will go through the internet and be right by your side.
I'm promoting and the pimping and the popping.
Yeah, actually, little do people know that Sean Pryor actually has airwaves abilities and has been using them to the fullest advantage the past couple weeks. In fact, he actually just did a collaboration with Shania Twain that will be on her next album.
Steal the world. Buy my comics, please. I'm not down on my knees.
Oh, please start talking again so he'll stop.
Wasn't there a Black Airwave for a minute?
There might have been for a while. It's hard to keep track with all the goddamn legacy heroes that come and go at DC.
Did James Robinson kill him?
Because
he demanded justice.
Wait. I'm sorry, Sean. Now that you mentioned that, actually, he heard you, and now he's dead.
For justice.
God damn it.
I am angry. I need justice.
I am the happiest moment of my life, and yeah, as usual, non sequiturs here at Comic Timing, the happiest moment of my life the past couple of months was cutting Justice Society and Justice League from Mike Polis, because that was just wrong. All right, that goddamn crossover. I had such high hopes for that because, James Robinson's written Justice Society before. He's an experienced man. He knows about the DC universe, and this was like what would have happened if James Robinson, in his sleep, typed out a script and handed it into editorial, and then editorial was like, "Oh, it's James Robinson. He knows what he's talking about." And then he got names wrong all over the place. What
the
hell?
Hey, Ian.
What?
James Robinson didn't do those teams justice.
Oh Lord.
There are problems, and they need justice.
Justice. Yeah. He should just write the Just Us League.
See, here's the thing, and I know all writers have had a bad run somewhere.
Yeah,
all writers have had a bad run somewhere. So, I understand a little bit, to a point.
Mm-hmm.
But like I know, like when, because I've had friends of mine complain that they don't like the Justice League, but because they think the members that are on the team aren't the Justice League.
Yeah.
To which I had to explain to them, I said, it's not who's on the team. Mm-hmm. That matters. The Justice League is the Justice League no matter who is in it.
Yeah, right.
It all comes down to the writing, mm-hmm, and the editorial team, and to make sure that everything's together. Now there are some people that feel that Robinson was at his best when he had his like original editorial staff, mm-hmm, with Starman.
Right.
They said, was it Archie Goodwin?
It was Goodwin. Yeah, and then he passed away.
When Goodwin was part of his editorial staff, his stuff was on point. So now, granted, like I said before, some people go through phases. There are some writers that will go they'll be immaculate their entire careers. Then there are some writers that are great for three, bad for one, great for three, bad for two, or just iffy. You never know. I mean, I still think Robinson's a really good writer. Maybe it's just a bad Justice League run. But when it comes down to it, it's not who's on the team that matters. It's all in the writing. It's all in the stories. And like I said, no offense to to Mr. Robinson. I dig him.
Yeah.
But I'm not feeling his JLA run, so I just stepped away.
Mm-hmm.
I just stepped away because why constantly complain about something? When it comes to comics, I get so tired of people complaining about comics. I mean, and it's all right now if you pay for something. It's like, right, you know what? I expected this to be better. That's one thing. But if you keep going back like a crackhead, you know, whose fault is it?
Well, I've cut my comic spending down by about $45 over the past couple of months, and it feels good because I'm not buying, you know, any of the stuff that it would take me months to actually gather together anymore. Right. And that's good. With Justice Society, he actually presented me with a wonderful chance to stop buying the book. Because I wasn't really digging Willenham's stuff, and I was going to hold on to see what the next writer's take on it would be. But after reading that crossover and me not liking it as much as I did, I'm like, okay, someone's going to have to tell me that the next Justice Society arc is good, and then I'll pick it up and trade and see what's going. I'm not going to spend money straight out and then find out it's a piece of poo.
Right, no.
Well, speaking as the proverbial crack dealer in this analogy, I find it very annoying that my clients just keep bitching and bitching about the product. Just smoke it!
Yeah.
Smoke it and like it!
MidtownComics.com, by the way, for any of Raph's rants.
And blog.midtowncomics.com for a scintillating review of Superman Earth 1.
Yes, which I haven't read yet, but I did hear that that the artist on that, Mr. Shane Davis, decided to draw Lois Lane as Dexter's sister from Dexter.
Maybe.
and one more comment on James Robinson, and then we'll get back to the actual task at hand here. I want James Robinson over at Marvel, because the one shot that he did for World War II Captain America for the 75th anniversary of Marvel was pretty damn good. It was excellent. Marcus Martin art, and he wrote a excellent World War II story. So Christie's been brought up on Twitter a couple days ago that he'd love to see a World War II comic, Captain America, out. And I think I want to see James Robinson on that comic. You know, give it a rest at DC for a while. Let yourself recharge. Go over to Marvel. See what you can do with Cap.
Green Lantern recharge.
Yes. We shall see. But back to PKD. Now, with Fracture, I mean, of course it's not going to be, you know, the same sort of story that Mercury and the Murder is, because Mercury and the Murder is a detective tale more than anything.
Right.
But with Fracture, is this going to be straight out superhero action here?
Yeah, now, okay, here's the deal. With Action Lab Entertainment's Fracture, it is a superhero psychological story with some comedy thrown in.
Okay.
The main, let me give you a quick synopsis of what Fracture is all about.
Okay.
You have the city of Lower Triton, and they have a great superhero named Virtue.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the city's most maniacal villain, a guy by the name of Malice. And then there's this average Joe named Jeff. All three of these people have something in common. They're all the same person.
Snap!
they're all the same person. The thing is, they don't know it.
Okay.
And so what happens is that Jeff accidentally stumbles upon Malice's, scientific diary, and finds out that Malice is going to try to take out Virtue. So seeing that they're all the same, if Malice takes out Virtue, then they're all dead. So now Jeff has to stop himself from killing himself to prevent himself from killing himself.
Murder, suicide.
Why, hello, Mr. Sentry. How are you?
Exactly. But Chad is really killing it as far as the artwork goes. This is probably the best I've ever seen from Chad.
Mm-hmm.
In my lifetime of working with Chad Ciccone, you know, because he's come a long way since like the first issue of Mercury and the Murd. That's for sure. He's doing superhero stuff. He's really, when you see it, you're going to see a lot of Kevin Maguire influence in it.
Okay.
A lot, because, you know, Chad's a real big Kevin Maguire fan, and he's pushing that envelope. It's not that he's biting Maguire. We're getting Chad. We're getting the best of Chad with a touch of Kevin Maguire in him, and the facial expressions and the actions and all this other stuff sell the book. And with Chad and Dave together on doing the colors are absolutely beautiful. You know, absolutely beautiful.
You know who Chad also reminds me of?
Who?
Pasquale Ferry.
Huh.
Because when I saw you guys remember the first image when they announced Matt Fraction and Thor, of Thor standing right with the Rainbow City behind him and everything? I looked at it and I was like, does Chad have a like pseudonym he uses. This looks a lot. I mean, like, not 100%, but I mean, like, I don't know, for whatever reason. Maybe I'm being crazy, but. I'm being crazy.
Well, that's good company to be in, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Know? Yeah, I mean...
I'm not dissing Chad or Pasquale.
Yeah, right. Saying. It's just I think that's probably good for his career that he's heading down that road, because that's... When I think of Pasquale Ferry, I think of some of the cleanest comic book art out there when it comes to superhero action.
Oh, yeah, and Chad's work is definitely clean. It's definitely clean. It's definitely crisp. I can't be... You know, any more like enthusiastic than I mean, I'm like stoked about it. Right. I'm so stoked about it. I've already seen the cover for issue 2, and some of the interior work for issue 2, and it's fantastic. So that's why we pushed so hard to get a Kickstarter project for Fracture issue 1, because what we want to do is, like, we're trying to raise $3,600,
okay,
and the $3,600 is to get Fracture issue 1. Printed, solicited, and published.
Okay.
And because this is a full-color comic. This is not a black and white. You know, this isn't a grayscale. This is a full-color comic through and through. So when we went to Kickstarter.com, we presented the project to them, and Kickstarter was real hyped about it. They were like, go ahead and do it. You got our blessing. Here you go. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I put together a video showing some stills from Fracture and what the story was about, and then I gave my spiel. And what we decided to do is... we're, like, as I said before, trying to raise $3,600. The minimum pledge is $1. If you donate $1, you receive our sincere thanks and gratitude. So, you know, we would appreciate that. It'd be awesome if we get, like, you know, 70,000, 80,000 people to donate $1.
$20 trillion.
But,
send.
Okay. Yeah, don't cash that check.
What we also did is that we are giving out rewards for people that pledge $10 or more. So, say, for instance, if you pledge $10, we'll print your name in the acknowledgement section of Fracture Number 1. We'll give you a PDF copy of Fracture Number 1, and we'll give you an Action Lab Entertainment button. If you donate $25, you'll receive a Kickstarter-exclusive copy of Fracture Number 1, which will have a different cover than the direct market version of Fracture Number 1, an Action Lab Entertainment button, and we'll get your acknowledgements. Printed in the acknowledgement section of Fracture Number 1. Mm-hmm. We also have a pledge for $50 or more. If you do $50, you'll receive the Kickstarter exclusive copy of Fracture Number 1 signed. You also receive an original color sketch card by artist Chad Ciccone, the lab button, and once again, your name printed in the acknowledgement section. And then we have three more donation tiers. If you donate $100, you will receive a Kickstarter exclusive signed copy of Fracture, an original sequential page from another book that we're working on at Action Lab right now.
And Dave Duarte will kiss you on the forehead.
No, maybe no. That's a little bit more expensive.
Yeah, but, yeah. Actually, if you pledge $3,600, Sean Pryor will bow to an idol that's actually been carved in your likeness.
Yes, and I will reenact the scene from The Golden Child. But
oh my God, yes, The Golden Child.
But now also for $100, you'll get the signed copy, Kickstarter exclusive signed copy of Fracture Number 1, a page of artwork from another Action Lab project that's being worked on right now, an original black and white sketch card from Action Lab artist Daniel J. Logan, plus the lab button, and your name will be printed in the acknowledgement section. For $250, you'll receive the signed copy of Fracture Number 1, an original sequential page of artwork from Fracture Number 1 signed by artist Chad Ciccone, an original 8x11 color head sketch by Action Lab artist Andrew Charpar, plus the button, plus the your name printed in the acknowledgement section, and then the big one, $500. You'll receive the signed copy of Fracture Number 1, an original 11x13 painting by Action Lab artist and MC Super Ugly. Also, you also receive one of his music CDs, and also you receive an original 8x11 color sketch by artist Dave DeWanch, plus the button, plus your name will be printed in the acknowledgement section of Fracture Number 1. And normally one of Super Ugly's paintings goes for like $350.
Wow. Damn.
So, you know, we're trying to give you as much as possible for, you know, forever how much you donate. And we're also going to put in international pledges as well, because the shipping's a little bit more expensive for international.
You forgot to put the partridge in a pear tree, and at the end,
Hey, man, we got to give. We give until it hurts. You know, give until it hurts. And we just want to prove to people that this book is happening. This is legit. Issue one is almost finished. It's near completion. We just need, you know, we just need the financial backing through Kickstarter. That's why we're raising this money.
Yeah.
So we can get this book printed.
And if you pledge $1,000, you will receive a video of Sean Pryor punching Raf Suhu in the gut.
Speaking of which, Sean, do you realize what your acronym is?
No, what is
yours,
it?
Not yours personally, but it's ALE.
Yeah, Action Lab Entertainment. Yeah, ALE.
And so if you do merchandising, you know, you could do a couple of beer steins, maybe a couple of, you know, glasses, and the ads could all say, "You don't need beer goggles for these comics." I earned the punch. I earned the punch.
Yes, yes, you have. But you know, we are actually working on additional merchandising for Action Lab Entertainment. Our logo for Action Lab Entertainment is a golden lab with a dog, a golden lab with goggles and a rocket pack.
Oh, sweet!
Oh, that's pretty cool.
So yeah, if you go to Kickstarter.com, type Action Lab in the search header. And it will take you to our fundraiser. There's a video for the project, and it starts off with the Action Lab logo. So you'll see the black and white Action Lab logo, mm-hmm. and you'll see the dog with the rocket pack.
Sweet comics that cure what ails you.
Yes, exactly.
And I, by the way, right now I'm totally pitching a comic book called The Man from L.A.G.E.R. The Man from Lager.
The loosely associated group of evil reprobates?
Something like that.
Oh. God, I'm really good with this. I mean, that was quick. You gotta admit, that was like less than 3 seconds after you uttered it.
That's not bad.
Yes. No, it's not bad at
all. I'm not saying the acronym itself is good.
You could get Howard Porter to draw The Man from Lager.
Jack Eunice is.
Y'all ain't right.
You knew what you were getting into.
Oh, Budweiser. John Miller.
Nice.
Jack Guinness.
Yeah, and I see that the Action Lab website is up and running now.
Yeah, actionlabcomics.com. You can find out a little bit more of what we're doing over there. It also has a letter about our Kickstarter fundraiser that we started, and also it'll give you insight on the team over at Action Lab right now.
Sweet, sweet. You know, Kickstarter has been very, very generous to comic book creators of late. I mean, it seems like almost everybody is doing a Kickstarter in one form or another when they need money in order to back their business now. And I mean, people don't seem to realize this is an Amazon company here.
Yeah, Amazon in conjunction with American Express. So it's a real big deal. And I think what really set it off was when Steve Bryant was able to, like, you know, go big with his project for Athena Voltaire and the Volcano Goddess. When that went over, because, like, I think he was trying to raise $7,000 for it, and he actually raised over $10,000. You know, when that happened, that, like, just started the flood wave of people saying, you know what, if he can do it, I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is cool, you know, because you always want to spark creativity.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and, like, the thing is, there are some projects there that some people were realistic, some people weren't.
Right.
You know, I mean, because, like, when Steve, you know, wanted to raise $7,000, there's a reason. I'm like, that dude is legit. That dude, you know, is an Eisner nominee.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's got credentials, okay? You know. So, and there are some people that, you know, that asked for an absurd amount of money for their book, and when they didn't get it, they didn't know why. So I'm like,
wait,
you know.
You guys won't give me $50,000 for a 16-page black and white special?
No.
Oh. It doesn't matter if this comic book was drawn by Jim Lee and lettered by Jack Kirby, okay?
All right. Hold on. Jim, they don't want to do it. I know. I don't know what they're thinking. Jim. All right.
Comic book.
I gotta go. I'll talk to you later.
Comic book written by God himself.
Yes.
God. Dude. I know. Listen, we're recording. I know you can't really change time for me. I gotta talk to you later.
My creative team is very upset.
It's a shame.
Very, very sorry. But one thing I wanna you know, tell people is that the way Kickstarter works is that if we don't hit our goal, we don't receive any of the money.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to hit our goal.
Yeah.
It would be awesome if we could go over it, but right now, you know, my focus is that we've got to hit the goal. The fundraiser expires on January 14th, 2011. So we got a little bit of time.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're hustling as hard as possible to get people to believe enough to donate.
Ian is putting this out on January 12th, 2011. So
I'm totally going to give you guys at least 2 days.
Do it now. Donate.
Comic timing.
yes, comic timing. It doesn't come out a lot.
That's what she said?
Oh, dear God.
And Cassina's somewhere in the corner sleeping.
oh, you knew, huh?
Oh, but of course. But of course.
That's what a married man does, after all.
No, Brent, but Brent, seriously, if you're listening to this, you know, congrats to you, sir.
Hell yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's already enjoying the robes that I bought him and Mandy.
Your life ends now. I mean, congratulations on this wonderful journey you're taking, Brent. I wish you and Mandy the best.
Yes, yes, and completely forgetting the fact that Sean Pryor is happily married and...
And I know tons of people that I'm... Yes, I know.
Yes,
But
yes.
For Brent specifically, go... Okay, I can't do it. I can't do it. No, legitimately have a great time. I'm not going to bust your chops.
It's all good. It's all good. It's all good. Well, and with the... So, all right. So you've got until January. You've got... As of this recording, you got $256.
Right.
And it's been up for 2 weeks?
No. It's been up for 7 days.
Seven
it's been
days.
Up for a week.
Okay.
It's been
week. Up for a... Well, dude, the $255 in... a week is kind of a good pace.
Yeah, it is. If we can keep this pace up, I think we're going to be just fine. So, but like I said before, it's all about that hustle and making people believe in the book, in the comic that we have with Fracture, that is good enough for people to be willing to donate. That's why we're giving so much to people that do donate,
right?
You know, as proof, as a way of saying thank you, you know, because without them there is no book.
Yeah. I donated $5,000, so I'm actually getting a signed Medal of Honor that is gold and is actually a sculpt of Sean Pryor's head.
Oh, that would be kind of awesome.
That would, yeah.
I'm no egotistical dude or anything, but even I think that would be kind of cool.
I can totally imagine people coming to my apartment after that, and like on the coffee table is just Sean's head, and we're like, why do you have the head of a black man? And I'm like, oh, it's a long story.
Is that a young thin Forrest Whitaker? why you got that on your mantle, son? What's wrong with you?
Why does that Sam Jackson have hair?
Yeah, exactly.
Ain't you seen his movies?
Deep Blue Sea.
Hold on to your butts.
Hey, I, by the way, had some Jell-O pudding the other day. Still delicious.
Tasty, yes.
Yeah, no, it's good stuff.
Thank you, Bill Cosby.
Yeah, for sure. So what other Action Lab projects do you have in the pipe? I mean, anything that'd be willing to announce now? Or
Yeah, sure. The way it's going down is the first project is actually the Signature Series book, and that's Back in the Day, which is a sci-fi time travel romp that redefines the coming-of-age tale that was written by Dave DeWanch, with artwork by Daniel J. Logan, and that's a Signature Series release. Mm-hmm. That will actually be our first book that's out, but it won't be in the direct market. It'll be available for solicit through dcbservice.com and also via the internet, and all the digital markets. Mm-hmm. That comes out in April of 2011.
Okay.
Then we're going to release Fracture afterwards, and Fracture in the direct market will be out June through August because it's a 3-issue limited series. What we're trying to do, if everything works out with Diamond, we will solicit issue 1, solicit issue 2, and then we'll solicit issue 3 in the trade at the same time.
Nice.
You know, if everything works out and we hit our quote unquote quotas, and then after Fracture is done, we're going to have a couple of signature series releases after that. We'll have like an currently untitled horror project. Written by Sean Gabron.
You should just keep that name, by the way. Currently Untitled Horror Project. That sounds like a winner right there. I would see that movie.
Kumpf is the best comic I've ever read this year. Must read.
But we also, XO1 The Rock Solid Steel Bots is actually porting over to Action Lab as a signature series original graphic novel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, written by myself and Adam Bezzignotti. Adam Bezzignotti actually... help co-write the last chapter. As Adam Bezzignotti has written a book called Deus Ex Comica, And, you know, after he wrote that, we had a talk. And because I've been so busy, I haven't been able to just keep up with everything. And I said, well, if I plot out the last chapter, can you write it for me? And he's like, yeah. And he got a good feel for the characters. So, you know, he's wrapping up the last chapter. And so we can give these pages to Daniel J. Logan so he can finish them up and get it all ready to roll.
It's good to know so many talented people.
Yeah, yes, it is. It's a wonderful thing. Thank God for the internet and comic book conventions. But so we got that. That's going to be a signature series release. Space-Time Condo, which is the hit webcomic by Dave DeWanch.
I was hoping you were going to say that.
This is going to be a collected edition of Space-Time Condo. This will be a direct market release, and that's going to come out possibly fourth quarter 2011.
Bought it.
And then,
Bought it.
Okay, good. And then what we're going to do is we are going to have a new Agents of Colt miniseries come out in January of 2012. But what we're going to do is to get people ramped up for it, we're going to re-release Agents of Colt Recipe for Destruction, and it's going to be you know, like the smaller size trades, not like, you know, your average size trade, but I guess manga size trades or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to re-release it. We're going to touch it up a bit, re-release it, put a nice fresh new cover on it.
Digest, basically.
Yeah, digest size. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Digest size to, you know, to get it in the hands of readers that never read AOC before, and that's going to come out in December of 2011, followed by the new miniseries that will come out in 2012. And, you know, we're going to have a couple of Action Lab licensed T-shirts and some, you know, licensed pins and stuff like that. We may have some glasses. Who knows?
Oh, my God.
Dude, what?
Digest the Killer Clown. He makes you die with a smile.
Oh, why?
You know what? I'm so glad you're getting this all out of your system,
yes.
Right?
Well, I gotta get the bad ideas out somehow.
See, and talk about bad ideas. What you should also have is you should have cardboard cutouts of yourself that go buy my book, buy my book. You know, similar to Mr. J. Sherman from The Critic.
Yes, I missed that show.
it was good. I was a little pissed off when they did the internet only episodes and they only had like two characters from the original series in it. But whatever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hey, at least it was on the internet for a while. That's when Shockwave was big. Were they on Shockwave.com or something?
They were on Shockwave.com, yeah. Yeah, which is still huge to this day. No.
What's a Shockwave?
I don't know, man. It's a... Isn't that like a Transformer?
Maybe. Yeah. Digest! He's a killer clown!
Don't ever let him put this book out. Okay.
No. He's going to talk to somebody else about that because he is on his own.
We still have Surreptitious Lee to talk about and all that.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And that's for another day.
Another day, another time, and not this particular phone call.
No. Another podcast.
Yeah. Right.
Yes.
So it's good to know that you have a full plate in the pipeline. That's good.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So no. You first, sir.
Oh no! It's just that once it's one of those things that when you start up a company like this, you have to have a line of things lined up for at least 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. Not only to have stuff ready, but to prove to others that you're trying to be here for a while and that you already have plans. And as I said before, year one's all about survival. If we can't survive year one, we're screwed.
Yeah.
And, you know, and yes, we will be looking into, you know, trying to get other people on board for, you know, for projects and things like that. You know, if there's a creative team that has a book, you know, that they want to put out through us, you know, we'll be willing to work with them. But right now, year one is about survival. Year two is trying to, you know, put out our stuff and also bring out, you know, stuff by other groups at the same time.
Okay. And how much of this is going to be available at Super Show?
Now, Super Show, the way it's going to go down is you're going to have Back in the Day available, and you're also going to have the first issue of Fracture available before it hits the direct market.
Cool.
Oh, you out of time, baby!
I know that some people have concerns about, you know, like they've said, some people say that, you know, Diamond frowns upon you for putting out a book before it actually hits the direct market, but at the same time, we got to make money.
Yeah, right.
We got to make money. So, and also the version that will be at conventions will have a different cover than the direct market version.
Okay.
Anyway, and so you know, to us it's a win-win because it continues to spread the word about Fracture. So, because if you really think about it, as far as the direct market goes and indie books go, you know, we got a good chance to possibly get anywhere between like 1,700 to 3,000 copies of Fracture sold in the direct market.
I've got a comic to pimp.
between pre-order wise. But who's to say that those books actually get out to all the stores?
Yeah, and the thing is about selling at a super show is that you're literally just like selling it to your friends anyway.
Yeah, you can say that. Yes, you can definitely say that. And also, you know, introducing, you know, new readers to Action Lab too, because there are the people that already know what, you know, myself and Dave and Sean Gabrin and Mr. Ciccone, all of us have done before.
And at that point, I'll have my 12 comp copies of every single comic anyway. I could just distribute that to everyone I know, and they could distribute it to everyone they know, and, you know, we'll print out copies of it and give it to all their friends, and yeah, it'll be great.
And so on.
Et cetera.
But this is a wonderful venture, and I don't mind putting that work in for this. And I just, like I said, I just want people to believe. I want people to believe that what Action Lab Entertainment is doing, you know, is great. And what we're trying to put out and the content we're trying to put out is wonderful, and it keeps people coming back. It's like we're going to have, you know, books for everybody. I mean, you know, we, like, say, for instance, Fracture, I would say, is in the teen and up environment. You know, my books will be all ages books, you know, and we're kind of like, how can I say, it's like, you know how Boom is? Boom has stuff for adults, Boom has stuff for kids. We are essentially doing the same thing. We'll have adult material, you know, material for, you know, adults that adults can read and enjoy, and then material that everybody can read and enjoy. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
So we're going to have a real good time with this.
And are you also trying to get every Sean in the comic book business under one roof?
Yeah, most definitely. We want Black Sean, White Sean, Asian Sean, Italian Sean.
I'm changing my middle name.
Aborigines Sean. We're trying to get them all.
You know, I still have you in my phone as Black Sean.
That's fucking awesome.
Why do you have a didgeridoo in here?
I don't know. I thought I got rid of it, but
I just found it. It's awesome.
That's just absolutely lovely. whoever's bright idea it was to record with him live in a studio is just. Oh wait, that was me.
That was genius.
Yeah, great.
It was the finest idea since fire.
Hey, Mr. Smarty Pants Raff, you have any further questions for Mr. Pryor?
Why are comics good?
Any real questions?
No. I think you guys covered it pretty well.
Yeah? Okay. All right.
Remember, that's your friend.
I like how you just, like, officially disowned him.
For the record, Sean Pryor has no affiliation with me on a personal level.
And after this, not a professional one either. Oh, man. Well, once we get the full, Shazam and all that about what's going on with PKD,
copyright
we'll certainly cover that on Comic Timing as well. But I'm glad to see that Action Labs is off to a up-and-running start over here.
Oh, thank you. You know, like I said before, Action Lab Entertainment is where it's at, and I couldn't be prouder to work with a wonderful bunch of people. And you know, I didn't mention, like, you know, Andrew Charpar is Super Ugly, you know, and you know, they're part of the team too. And you know, we're all working together. Jason Grice is also helping with marketing,
nice,
on the Action Lab side, and it's all one big cohesive unit, you know, trying to do the best we can, and we're all still learning. You know, this is new for a lot of us. You know, this is, you know, me being a leader. It's, like I said before, it's one thing running your own show, but when you are working with a collective group of people, you know, there are things that you have to do in order to be an effective leader, and, you know, and to make sure that, you know, you are giving 100% of yourself when everybody else is giving 100% of yourself. So this is a really big deal for me, an extremely big deal, and I just don't want to let anybody down, including myself. So, you know, we're serious. We're serious about this. So please, if you believe, go check out actionlabcomics.com and, you know, check out that site, or go to kickstarter.com, type Action Lab in the search header, and you will see what we're talking about with Fracture. And as always, we thank you for any support or donation you could give. And even if you can't give anything, if you just spread the word and spread the love, we thank you too. And
it cures what ails you.
Once again, that's your friend.
Oh, I do have a question, Mr. President. Given the climate of today's landscape, with so much partisanship and just pure bitterness between the pro DC and pro Marvel camps, how do you think you're gonna get? I just lost the point.
You should have heard him over the weekend, because it was Chris's birthday over the weekend, and mm-hmm. she actually printed out badges for her birthday comic convention, basically.
Oh my God, that was one of the best cons I've ever been to.
ChrisCon 2010 are what the badges said, and at one point she asked for questions. And of course, Raph is like, "Yeah, hi. I have a question. When are you going to release the Alan Moore issues? Because I know that they were done in the 80s and they really haven't been talked about since." And of course, Chris's reaction was, "Well, actually, that was the Chris of Earth 2."
No, there's also the first thing was, obviously, at any convention, you've got the fanboy version worship, where it was like, "Hey, Chris, I just want to say that year 24, one of my favorite runs ever. Year 24. I thought it just came together so well." And she's like, "Well, you know, I thought actually 23 was better." I was like, "You know, I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying my personal favorite, 24. and it just continued on.
And going back to Action Lab for a minute, what's great is that you got Jason Gryce on your side. So if you ever need to, like, strong arm anybody, you just have Jason Gryce stand next to that person.
And can you imagine the Japanese markets? They're just going to look at him and fear for Godzilla, and they'll just do whatever you say.
I mean, Jason Gryce is, in essence, Big Daddy Cool Diesel. So that's
You did not say problem. Big Daddy Cool.
Oh, I most definitely did.
You did not take it back to, like, the WWF days.
Listen to me. This is the bad guy. Razor Raphon. You want good comics? You go to the gold. You go to L.
But no, but dude, my favorite was when Jim Ross brought in fake Razor Ramon and fake Diesel.
And fake Diesel?
Yeah.
Yes, that was a Survivor Series 96.
Yeah, man. And what was it? I think Diesel was played by Isaac Yankem / Kane.
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally. Good stuff.
But see, and that whole pay-per-view, they were like, they're just as good as blah, 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 and blah, 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 blah. I'm like, no.
And please stop pretending that Jim Ross is a heel. I mean, come on. Please. This is Jim Ross we're talking about here. He was a cowboy hat.
So cold.
The rattlesnake.
No, you know what, man? What I used to, like, love when I got back into wrestling for a small period of time, from like late 90s to the mid 2000s.
Yeah.
Like Jim Ross really got into it, okay? Mm-hmm. And he really got into it. And like anytime like Stone Cold would get like screwed by Vince McMahon, and like it would be toward the end of the show, right before like, you know, the show closes out, you know, Jim would get almost like, "Damn it!" And, you know, he would get like just start cussing.
"Oh my God! You can't do this to him, Vince! What are you doing, you jerkwad?"
But I remember one of the funniest things I'd ever saw. There was a time, there was some match for some stupid reason. There was a match with Jerry the King Lawler. Mm-hmm. And I want to say it was like Spike Dudley or somebody versus Taz and somebody else. Uh-huh. And I don't know why. It was just on Raw.
It was like the SmackDown versus Raw match, I think.
May have been. I can't remember. But I just remember in the middle of the match, Taz was like outside of the ring. Jim just got out from his announcer's chair, picked up a trash can lid, waddled over, hit Taz. Crowd went crazy. He went back and sat back down. I laughed my ass off because it was like something out of like a Looney Tunes cartoon.
Hey, excuse me, ladies and gentlemen. Whack! All right, I mean, the king has got Taz in the submission.
You know, all I'm reminded of is when Vince McMahon used to actually do commentating, and how he was a completely different human being.
Vince was a great commentator.
Yeah.
Vince was a fantastic commentator.
Back in the days when he was a face.
Yes.
Yep. it was like him and Gorilla Monsoon.
Oh, Gorilla.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, who was eventually commissioner of the WWF.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, boy.
But seriously, Jason Gryce is huge.
Totally.
Yeah, but he's a good dude.
Oh,
and like,
yeah.
And like all of us, man, we know we do this for the love of comics, but at the same time, this is also a business. Mm-hmm. So, we've got to be, we're going to have our fun, but we got to be real serious with this too, because we can't falter.
Mm-hmm.
We can't, we'll make mistakes. Mistakes will happen, but we can't falter.
Oh, yeah.
So, like I said, we got to hustle. And we got to get our grind on. That's why, I joke that I'm on the Action Lab Entertainment campaign tour right now. And I take this title as president of Action Lab Entertainment real serious.
Well,
so,
change has come to comics. I think that with your administration, real change can be affected.
We're not going to let this be a deficit. Instead, we're going to go forward, and we're going to continue to make money. And in fact, we're going to kickstart Action Lab Entertainment.
You're going to be profitable.
And I sound more like Stewie than I do Mr. Barack Obama.
Right,
yeah. I'll let you get to it.
Well,
I actually have to ask you guys something after we record.
All right. All right.
Well, like I've said many times before, Baracko Comics is a change in comics that you can believe in. So please believe in Action Lab Entertainment. Well, that's all I'm going to say.
Oh, hells yeah, hells yeah. Now, with the spotlight, that remains at PKD, yes?
Oh, pardon me?
But the PKD Media Black Box, man.
Oh, yeah. The podcast will still be going. PKD Black Box is still part of the PKD Media family. I'll still be doing that on a biweekly basis, mm-hmm. for as long as I can. We've got other podcasts there, too, like Donnie Salvo's Tales from the Attic.
Yep.
And and the Carol Chronicles, that's still going down, too. We've got a bunch of shows lined up for 2011. Trying to do a lot of different things. Not too many different things, but trying to do a lot of stuff in 2011 with the PKD Black Box. Trying to dedicate a month to the ladies. We want to, talk with female creators. We want to talk with, all levels of geekdom. From the female aspect. So I'm trying to reach out to female podcasts. I'm trying to reach out to, actresses.
Cool.
Women geek websites. Mm-hmm. All types of stuff. I got the list and I've already started contacting people. So, trying to do that too.
Excellent.
And
put a violet ring on it.
Yeah, I want you to stop right now. But no, we're trying to do all types of things with the show next year. That podcast has, been doing really, really well and a lot better than I thought, would be. To be honest with you, I had no idea it would receive as much love as it has in, the year that it's been out.
The Parsec.
Nominated for 2 Parsec Awards, man.
Nice.
Nominated for 2 Parsec Awards. And to this day, I'm like, huh? How? Are you serious?
Hey.
I'm like, you met some other black dude, right? You weren't talking to me, right? Seriously, there's some other prior out there somewhere, right? No, you fool. I was like, wow.
All you podcasters look alike.
Yeah, I know. I know. That's why I wear glasses.
Stand out from the crowd, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, which is the exact reason
sorry.
Why I wear glasses, because, otherwise I look like every other Jewish podcaster.
We so sorry. We podcast long time.
All right. Well, I think the Action Labs portion of the episode is pretty much done there. But yeah, ActionLabsComics.com.
No, ActionLabComics.com
is what I meant to say. But of course, me tripping over my own words as usual, didn't wind up happening. PKDmedia.com as usual for all the PKD Media stuff and the podcast. Yes. For the Black Box Podcast. And before this episode is done, we got one more conversation, and that would be, who would you put on your comic book Mount Rushmore? This is the comics podcast theme, yet again, started by Peter Rios at ComicGeekSpeak.com. So, we're going to have 4 artists and 4 writers to put on our comic book Mount Rushmores. And we'll start with the writers, and then we'll go to the artists. And
right.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but let's start with Rav.
Wow. Are you sure about this, Ian?
I might be making a mistake
here. So far in the podcast, you have made a couple of mistakes here.
I understand that, and trust me, I'm going
to
pay for it later.
But to start with me is to really sink the ship.
I'm going to pay for this later, trust me.
But I think you, someone's just taking your wallet and just taking money anyway.
Well, let's just go with the Mount Rushmore and worry about the problems later.
Okay. All well, right. Starting off my Mount Rushmore
in a normal voice.
Starting off, I'm gonna go in a historical sense with my list. I'm gonna go with Joe Shuster first.
Okay.
Because is he the writer? He's the writer. He was the writer of Superman. And without Superman, there are no other superheroes. And without other superheroes, there's no real... I mean, not that comics wouldn't exist without Superman or superheroes, but really, comics as we know them are synonymous with, you know, when Superman. I mean, so... And being that he's my favorite character, I get to pick this one. So, suck it out there!
Okay. All right. Well, we'll go back and forth. So, that's his first pick. So write that one down, folks. Schuster,
if you're keeping record.
Yeah, Schuster is George Washington in this situation, I guess. Mr. Pryor, your first writer.
I'd have to go with Roger Stern.
Ooh, nice.
You know, Roger Stern, when I started really getting to comics, I read a lot of Roger Stern comics. His run on Captain America, his stuff, you know, with the Avengers. That man has had a foothold in comics for a very long time, and I just feel that he's also a staple in comic books. I mean, think about it. I mean, you know, he was also part of Action Comics, The Adventures of Superman. I think that was like during the, was that around or around the period of time after the Byrne, after Byrne left? You know, he wrote some good stories there.
Yeah.
But like his mark for me was left on The Avengers when he took over in issue 227 and wrote from like, I think like 227 all the way to 287. Mm-hmm. I read those books, you know, and I just love them. And like he's done all types of stuff. Like I said, Cap, Doctor Strange, the Avengers, Iron Man, you know, he's had his mark everywhere, man. And he's like one of my favorites. So, yeah, I'm going to have to put, Roger Stern up on mine.
That works for me, man. I mean, you talk about, you know, history and comic books, and so far we've got Schuster and Stern on the Mount Rushmore. That makes sense to me.
And not only that, his birthday is the same day as mine.
Oh, well that helps. So you have a special connection to him.
Yes.
Yeah. You wouldn't be born without Roger Stern.
No, nope. Straight.
Now, I'm going to pick somebody a bit newer to the game than what you guys have picked so far, but not entirely.
Ian, I haven't published yet.
Yeah.
You're giving me way too much credit.
It's not you, Raph.
Oh.
No, it's
oh.
not. It's oh. not.
Crack is bad. Crack oh. is bad, Raph.
Hey, yo!
I am going to pick Mr. Kurt Busiek.
Huh. Well, I can scratch him off my list then. Huh?
Well,
I had him as.
Well, no. Cool. See, because I can move somebody up. So no, go ahead, sir.
Okay. Well, the thing is about Kurt is that every single title that he has written, he's had good issues on. I mean, really, like I can't actually think of a bad run that Kurt Busiek has had. I mean, there've been some runs that, you know, might not have been storied, but they were still good enough. Like his Justice League run, for example, with I believe Garney did the art on that, and it was serviceable. It wasn't bad, but it was typical Justice League, and I liked that because it had a nice element to it with the crime syndicate. And that was pretty cool. But specifically, I'm going on his Avengers run, which to this day, I don't care who you say, except for possibly Roger Stern, is probably one of the best damn comics runs of all time. Right there.
Hands down.
Yeah. I mean, Brian Michael Bendis' Avengers would not exist right now if Kurt Busiek hadn't revived them after Heroes Were Born.
Yeah.
And that's no doubt right there. So you got that going for it. His Iron Man? Just about as good. And people forget that he wrote Iron Man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He was in that for a minute, too. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was in there for, actually, I think, like, possibly until even, like, the relaunch he was on Iron Man. And that was with Sean Chen art for a while. And it even had Quesada art for a while.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was gorgeous. I loved looking at it every time. And there's there. I mean, I haven't read most of Busiek's indie stuff, I guess quote unquote indie stuff. So I can't really say for any of that. But
you need to peep Astro City.
I need to. I know I do. And I'm planning on doing so actually, because I'm sure there's probably a couple of volumes available from my library, and I'm gonna start doing that pretty soon. I'm just happy that I finally started Invincible, which was great. But yeah, no, Kurt Busiek is on that list because, as I just said, basically, modern comic books would not exist without him. So he's there, no doubt about it. All right. So there's my first pick on the writers. We will roll it back to Sean for pick number two.
All right. For number two, I will pick Larry Hama.
It's Hama time.
And the reason why is because without this man is G.I. Joe, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Hasbro would not be nearly as big as they are if it wasn't for Larry Hama.
Oh, yeah.
The G.I. Joe comic would be nothing. The G.I. Joe comic would probably be like a 5-issue limited series with like no return whatsoever if it wasn't for Larry Hama. This man has created more characters, than we could possibly believe, and was able to create all these comics and yet deal with Hasbro, even through the stuff he didn't like Battle Force 2000. But he still was able to work through it and is still writing Joe comics to this day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this man made licensed merchandise comics not only a viable commodity, but he made good ones, because we've all read bad ones.
Oh, yeah.
We've all read bad ones, but he helped make them great. And, and G.I. Joe is like one of my favorite things ever. So I had to put Larry Hama, or Hama, however you properly pronounce it.
Hama time.
But, Lord. But no, he had to be put on my Comics Rushmore.
Yeah, well, for a guy who played such an instrumental part of your childhood, I mean, you got to put him on there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, think about it. I mean, if you go back to the Marvel G.I. Joe run, didn't he write every issue?
I think so. Yeah, there might have been one or two fillers, but I think he might have actually written them all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm talking about like from the good, the bad, and the ugly, like the neon ninjas up in the piece. You know, he did it all.
It was the 80s.
Oh, yeah, 80s, early 90s, man. He did it all, man. And so, no, a lot of respect for him.
Yeah.
And the fact that he can still crank it out, man, is amazing.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking it up right now on ComicBookDB to see if he actually did do them all. Let's see here. G.I. Joe. What was the – that was G.I. Joe Comics Magazine?
No. It was just G.I. Joe, a real American hero.
Real American.
He fought for freedom.
From issue one until – yeah, there were a few missing issues here and there, because he did 1 through 7 and then did 10. So
okay.
8 and 9 he didn't do. Yeah, other than a few missing issues due to, fill-in arcs, he did everything up until 159.
Mm.
Yeah, so that is basically everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he wrote issue 160 after that, which was a free comic book day, wasn't it?
Yeah, because
no,
that
and a half.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's right. It's 159 and a half. It was a new series. And it was a new series. And now that's over at IDW, continuing the Marvel run.
Very cool. Very cool. All right, Raph.
So I did Washington. I'm going to go with Jefferson now. And let's throw a little history lesson here. Jefferson was the idea man, really, of all the founding fathers. He was the guy that had all the ideas. I really want to go with... See, because I don't know Teddy Roosevelt that well, so I'm just going to go with Johns.
All right.
Because what Johns does... I mean, what Jeff does is not necessarily... He's not an original... Like, he doesn't come up with original ideas in the sense that he works on creator-owned products. But what he does is he takes the greater history and tapestry of a character, and basically of the universe, and just reweaves things in and goes, oh, look, those red threads over there would look nice with these blue threads over here. Let me just respin that and respin that. And because honestly, if you especially with his Superman run, there's nothing he did in there that I hadn't seen before in the Silver Age. And yet it was still fun, refreshing, and just awesome. And he does it so well, and I think that he's probably the best example of a writer that doesn't make retcon into a dirty word.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. I mean, all the threads that he's worked on over the years based on like throwaway lines even. I've just been like shaping the DC universe into what they currently are.
Going into Alan Moore's dumpster.
Yeah, and Alan Moore being annoyed about it, the little bitch. But whatever. Listen to the Alan Moore debate episode again if you want to find out more about that.
I don't like anything.
But yeah, no, he is totally the reason that today's DCU exists, just like Busiek is the reason that today's Marvel exists. So, all right, I'll give you that. So I'll go on the other end then. You pick Geoff Johns. I'll pick Actually, I was going to pick Bendis, but you know what? I'm going to pass on that for now.
I like Bendis.
I'm going to actually go with, and this is actually hard for me to do because it's like almost like excluding his endings. I'm adding him to this list. Mr. Brian K. Vaughan.
Okay.
Because what Brian K. Vaughan does is he creates characters that have a lasting impact on a lot of scales. For example, he created the Hood over at Marvel Comics, which then later became basically the head of all the villains during Bendis' run because he was that cool of a character and Bendis loved him that much that he was able to, you know, work on that. He created the Runaways, which started in a way a youth revolution over at Marvel, proving that, you know, young characters did need a voice. And, you know, sadly, there is no Runaways comic at the moment. But
we miss you, Brian.
We do miss you, and hopefully he'll come back to the comics world soon enough. But, you know, Young Avengers probably wouldn't have ever been published if not for Runaways. So you can give it that. Why the Last Man was epic and spanned, how many issues was it? Was it 100?
60.
60, okay. 60 issues, and every single issue of that I loved. Like, there wasn't one issue in the arc, except possibly the last one, but it grew on me over time, that I didn't, like, immediately read when it was in my pile. And it had that going for it. It was the Vertigo title that actually kind of got me reading Vertigo again. Because, like, I had dabbled, but I never really, like, picked up an issue-by-issue run in Vertigo, and he got me to do that. And Ex Machina, except for the last issue, was really, really good. Yeah, except for the last issue.
Ex Machina?
Ex Machina. You know what? Forget it. That last issue just never happened with Ex Machina. You know, it's just eventually going to come out like 5 years down the road. So I'm still eagerly anticipating the last issue of Ex Machina. Maybe it'll come out someday. That's why the run is so great, because they didn't even bother to finish it. Brian K. Vaughan goes on that, and you know what? Hell, even his Mystique was great. You know, people forget that him and McKeever had a great run going on Mystique.
What about his Aura?
Yeah, that was pretty damn cool. So yeah, Brian K. Vaughan goes on that list for me. All right, number three, Raph.
All right, so I'm really doing. I don't see. It's supposed to be a personal Mount Rushmore, but I'm doing this in such a meta sense. I mean, okay. Anyway, so next up is Lincoln. He's one of the more popular presidents. He's the great emancipator.
So anyway, what's your
Stan Lee? Because like Lincoln, he is probably the biggest name when it comes to comics. Who do you think of? You think of Stan.
You forgot the Roy at the end of his name.
Right. Well, you know, Sean. You know. You've done so much for comics. I mean, you came up with the Fantastic Four, and then you told Kirby what to do.
No, you have absolutely lost your damn mind.
I have lost my goddamn mind. But like, I mean, you know, say what you will about him taking credit for stuff that he should give credit to others and whatever. He was part of an age where comics were dying really quickly, and superheroes were practically non-existent, and he brought that all back. But he didn't bring it back the way it was. He changed the game. Him along with Ditko and Kirby and all the other guys, they made it a little more serious. They took the characters seriously. These weren't just clowns in multicolored bright costumes. They actually had feelings. They had thoughts. They had emotions. They went through things. They grew as real characters. And so Stan gets a lot of credit. And just because he's freaking Stan Lee. I mean, come on. Can you argue against the guy? No. Not when he says Excelsior the way he does. I mean, seriously.
Yeah. No, the modern age is all Stan.
Yeah, and it's all thanks to Jesus, the Messiah.
Jesus. And speaking of Stan Lee, Roy.
All right, let's see here. My third choice would be John Ostrander. And the reason why, I think he's extremely underrated as far as his contributions to comic books and to writing comic books go. In my life trying to write comic books, I've studied a lot of Ostrander's work, whether it be Star Wars or whether it be his DC stuff. I mean, people forget how big of a hand he had in Suicide Squad.
Definitely.
I mean, he is Suicide Squad. You know, him and Luke McDonald together were a fantastic team. But like, what really set my mark to really read DC Comics was John Ostrander, and I'll tell you why. I mean, I read Crisis on Infinite Earths, and I loved it as a kid, and like, that got me into reading DC Comics. But what really got me to really, really, truly go buy back issues of DC Comics in the 80s was a miniseries called Legends, mm-hmm. written by John Ostrander, with I think like Byrne and Len Wein and a couple other people. But Ostrander was the main force behind it. And you had Darkseid and the New Gods, you know, used in a proper way. And it was, for me, it was an excellent miniseries. Yeah, there's some camp in there now, but it doesn't matter to me. I still love and I still enjoy it. But Ostrander's hand is all in that. You know, that writing style is all in that. I mean, he helped introduce the Giffen DeMatteis Justice League mm-hmm. in this series.
Yep.
You know? There is no Giffen DeMatteis Justice League without the Legends miniseries.
It's true.
He helped give Guy Gardner that extra "I'm a dick" voice in Legends. Yeah, we all knew Guy Gardner was a jerk in the Green Lantern Corps books beforehand, but it was pretty much confirmed that he was a dick in Legends. And he's done so much with comics. I know I'm only skimming the surface with Star Wars stuff from Dark Horse and Legends. He's, you know, Suicide Squad. He's been everywhere in comics. And he's like one of the best writers ever. So that's why he is, you know, placed on my Mount Rushmore.
Well, you know what? Playing off of your pick, actually, my curveball, I guess you could say, pick is my third, Ms. Gail Simone.
Ah.
Yeah. And this isn't just sucking up to you, Gail. Trust me on this. Playing off of Mr. Ostrander, I think Gail reminded everybody just how badass even the smallest in popularity villains can be at DC.
Yeah.
You know, if played right, if done right, you could even care about the villains.
Catman, we're looking right at you.
Yeah. I mean, come on. Think of who she saved. You know, Bane was getting there because, you know, Greg Rucka revived him from a world of stupidity and made him cool again. And mm-hmm. then nobody used him after that. And right. then Gail Simone came around and said, yeah, I'll give him a shot in Secret Six. And we got the Bane that we have now out of it. You know, and she takes her own perverted sense of humor and plays it out so well in every book she does. I mean, that every time I pick it up, I have fun. And that's really, what else could you ask out of a comic book other than to feel like you had fun reading it in the end?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she does. Her Wonder Woman is, you know, I'll admit it, it's probably one of my favorite runs of Wonder Woman. It might not have been one that I clamored to pick up like the minute it came out, but when I read it in bursts, when I read it in like 6-issue chunks, it was pretty epic. You know, I mean, yeah. Greg Rucka's run was good. This was the one that I would hand to a little girl or boy who might be looking to read some Wonder Woman and say, this is going to get you to like the character.
Right.
And she did that. She world built there. And hey, Deadpool.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah. She did have a Deadpool run.
Yet another person that helped Deadpool back to popularity is Gail Simone.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, other than the Cable Deadpool run, her Deadpool and Agent X had people talking about Deadpool again.
I found my Winky! Winky, Winky, Winky.
Dude, she had Rhino on a keychain.
Yes, she did.
Okay? Yep. That was hilarious at the time. Love that. Love that.
Oh, I miss Agent X so much. They should totally put that on trade.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And what was her... I forget the name of that little kid that she wrote over at Marvel. Like the Barry Ween type kid that...
That wasn't Sentinel, was it?
No. This was like a kid's title that she did. I'm trying to remember the name of the character.
Was it Wary Bean, Really Smart Kid?
No. Stop it. I'm looking it up right now. One second. No, because I remember this, and it was... Like, it wasn't quite... Ween, but it was sort of like in that style, and now I will look it up and probably feel silly that I can actually remember the name of the damn thing.
Big Guy and Rusty the Boy Robot?
Let's see here.
You're not talking about Killer Princesses, are you?
No. This was for Marvel. And it was like right when she left Marvel, too. Let's see here.
Killer Princesses. The Marvelous Adventures of Gus Beezer.
There you go. Gus Beezer. Thank you. Because I was thinking Barry Ween. It's a name sort of like it. Gus Beezer. Yeah, no. And Gus Beezer comics were just, they were cute, they were fun, and they were for all ages. And I love a comic book that you can just hand absolutely anybody. And that's exactly what she did there. Now, Gail is revolutionary in her story structure and in the way she just makes characters come alive, and I want to see her do it for a long time to come, and I'm sure she will. So that's why she's on my Mount Rushmore for sure. And number four, Mr. Raff.
Well, I mean, I saved the best for last. I saved my personal most influential one for last because I think we all know who it is. It's the one writer I always talk about that I haven't mentioned. It's Grant Morrison.
I was going to say Chuck Austin.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Chuck Austin revolutionized comics for the better. I mean, I think that if they had allowed Chuck Austin to continue, we would have entered a new golden, nay, platinum age.
You stop talking now!
Anyway, with Grant, I mean, it's, yes, he's a terrific writer. Yes, he does some great things. And yes, not everyone loves him. And the people that don't love him, that's fine. I respect that. Suck it. But the whole thing with Grant is, without the stuff I read as a kid when I started collecting comics, I probably would not be as into comics. Like, Grant Morrison's JLA is what sold me on comics as a 12, 13-year-old. I mean, not to say that the other stuff I read wasn't great, but, I mean, it was good. I love reading, you know, Green Lantern and Superman and all that, but
yeah.
His, just the sheer, like, turning up to level 60 trillion, just that whole sense of action and adventure in JLA was just so amazing. I mean, I still quote it to this day. I still look to it for influence to this day. I mean, how many writers can do that? I mean, everyone has their, I mean, you know, maybe Grant isn't the one for you or whatever, but he always manages to put all these moments in. I mean, there's that. There's the fact that Superman is the ultimate savior of the multiverse. There's the fact that you can break Batman's mind and addict him to drugs and then just go, oh, all right, now it's my turn to kick your ass. It's just how amazing and how much he respects all these characters. And then not only that, I mean, his own work is We3 is terrific. Mm-hmm. I can't really read it around my dog or anything, but yeah, We3 is terrific. And Invisibles, I stopped trying to understand you years ago.
That's
but,
fine.
Yeah, Grant Morrison is my fourth person.
All right. I'm going to go with my fourth. And this is tough for me because it's trying to I got a bunch of names on the tip of my tongue right now. I mean, I was thinking to maybe do Bendis, but
Bruce Jones.
Bruce Jones. Yeah, when I think of screwing the pooch, I think of Bruce Jones. Thanks for ruining Checkmate, you jackass.
Pimple Monster.
Oh God! Oh, the pain of it. Oh, yeah, and oh. God, see, now I can't even think of my next thought because you just had to put Bruce Jones in my goddamn head. I was thinking of maybe going Bendis, but he's not quite there yet. I mean, he's influential. The Marvel Universe, current-day Marvel Universe, wouldn't be the same without him, but I don't know if future Marvel Universe is still going to be influenced by him. So we'll see. Sticking to maybe going Greg Rucka, but not yet. Not yet. Maybe in a few years as well. I think I'm going to have to go with Neil Gaiman.
That's an interesting choice.
Yeah, as my fourth. And the reasoning behind it is simple. He might not have written a lot when it comes to comic books.
Four.
Yeah. But when you see somebody in a bookstore, when you see somebody on a train, when you see somebody, you know, just walking down the street, happening to be reading like a trade or a comic or whatever, I'd say there's about a 60% chance they're reading Sandman.
Or they'll mention Sandman.
Or they'll mention Sandman, yeah. As their favorite comic book, even if they're not even a comic book fan, they probably know what Sandman is.
While listening to Enter Sandman?
Or, yes, while listening to Enter Sandman and waiting for Mariano Rivera to come in from the bullpen. but no, and that's important, that there's a comic book that's on the tip of people's tongues when they think of comics, and it's written by Neil Gaiman. And he revived the Eternals at Marvel.
Yes.
He wrote a story based in 1602 and actually managed to make it sort of awesome in the end.
That sounds cool. What's it called?
It's called 1602.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to spoil the entire fucking series here, but you know what? Who cares? The whole reason that 1602 existed was because of Captain America, you know, a rejected Captain America, a dejected Captain America, trying to find a place where he still mattered. That was so touching and relevant as well, because Cap's gone through experiences like that in our own Marvel U. And for that to have happened at all, you know, really sort of hit home for me. And when you read Marvel Comics right now, when you're in San Francisco's Golden Gate Park, there's still a Celestial sleeping there, thanks to Neil Gaiman. You know, that's still part of the Marvel Universe. When you think of Harry Potter, you can also probably think of Books of Magic.
Right.
You know, he's got these iconic titles that stay near the tip of people's tongues. And even though he only wrote about three issues, okay, it was three issues, or was it two issues of Batman? Was that two? That was two. Yeah, two issues of Batman that encapsulate the entire character and why he exists. Two issues. That's it.
Good night, Bruce.
Yeah.
Good night, Crime Alley. Good night, Pearl, streaming over Crime Alley. Good night, murdered mother who's bleeding out on the street.
Okay, do not turn Joker. This into Good Night Moon, okay? Do not turn
That's
this
what
into
he did.
Yeah, I know. But like it took me like two or three reads to really realize just how poignant and deep those comic books were, but they were. Yeah. And he gets characters. That's what he does. And that's why Neil Gaiman's got to be on that list for me. So, there's my four. Mr. Pryor, your fourth.
All right. My fourth not only comes from a writing aspect, but also it transitions into a television aspect as well. I'm going with Dwayne McDuffie.
Nice.
And Dwayne McDuffie, you know, means a lot to me. And the reason why he's on my Mount Rushmore is that, you know, he's one of the guys behind Milestone Comics. And, you know, and Milestone, I love Milestone Comics. I thought those were great when they came out. And, you know, some of that's collected right now. And he presented Static. And he also, you know, did some writing with, like, let's see, how can I say this? He did some Avengers West Coast stuff. Mm-hmm. He also, like, I remember he did his Ultraman comics. He's written Captain Marvel. He's a lot of people know him for like Damage Control.
Right.
Personally, I think he's the only person that can write Deathlok.
Yeah, he's up there.
To me, he's the only person that can write Deathlok. Anytime he hops on the Fantastic Four, you know, I've always enjoyed it. I still say to this day, when he hopped on Fantastic Four, and it was a short run, like between issues 542 to 553, mm-hmm. it was fantastic. Oh, I'm like, how can you go wrong with Black Panther Storm Thing and Johnny Storm on a team together? Yeah. And it was fantastic. They had fantastic adventures, and it was a fun time and a fun read.
Even his future arc was good, where the future Fantastic Four come back and try to mess with things.
Yeah, almost definitely. Mm-hmm. And you know, and yeah, I know like his quote unquote comic book resume may not be as heavy as other people, and some of the stuff that happened with DC as of late was kind of jacked up. But I, you know, you shouldn't discredit his writing skills, and not only that, how that translated and transitioned into him working in television to, you know, have, you know, credits with Static Shock and the Justice League cartoon, Justice League Unlimited, you know, Teen Titans Go,
yeah,
you know, even Scooby-Doo, but like
still doing the movies to this day too.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm working in, yeah, he's got heavy involvement in the DC animated movie side, which is fantastic. And those movies have been very entertaining as of late. And, you know, he touches so many things. And let's be real, man. If it wasn't for him, you know, working with the Men of Action folks, Ben 10 wouldn't have gone as far as it's going right now.
Oh, hell yeah.
You know, I mean, kids love Ben 10. More, you know, sometimes I think more kids know Ben 10 than they know Superman.
Ooh, it's, you know, it's getting close. It really is.
And I'm not saying that to be disrespectful. I'm just being honest. You know, I'm just being honest because, you know, with the exception of a comic book store and a couple spots here and there, working kids find Superman.
Nowhere right now, yeah.
You know, you might find him in a toy shelf in a 3-pack, but I'm talking about, like, besides that, where can they go cop some Superman stuff?
I think kids might actually know Spider-Man or Iron Man more than they know Superman right now.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. So, but he's done a lot for comics, not just in a printed standpoint, but from a television standpoint to help translate and transcend animated features and like episodic stuff dealing with comics to a whole new level. You know, he's done a lot, man. And I think he's just super talented and he's severely underrated in comics. I think granted, he probably makes a hell of a lot more money doing animation stuff than he ever did with comics.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, I don't blame him for him, you know, staying where he's staying right now. So
gotta get up, gotta go.
Yeah, most definitely. So props to him.
Well, I'll start off the artists here. My first here, and this is actually playing a little bit off of what you just did with Dwayne there, Sean, Bruce Timm.
Nice.
Yeah. Because Bruce Timm, you talk about shaping my childhood and shaping the current DC animated universe as well as the comic book universe when it comes to Batman. That's what Bruce Timm did. Bruce Timm made Batman cool again. You know, mm-hmm. he brought back the darkness to...
And the pit?
And the pit.
And the Max?
Yeah, you son of a bitch. he brought back the edge to Batman that was lost there for a little while, and it made a whole new generation of kids fall in love with the character. His comic book works, while not nearly as many as it would be his animated works, are terrific. I mean, the original Mad Love that was done in comic book form is probably one of the best Batman stories of all time. Mm-hmm. You know, it had to do with one of his creations, Harley Quinn, but hell, it works. And that's what's great about that for me. I mean, the Harley and Ivy adventures too, really, really fun. His work with the Two-Face character made Two-Face cool to me again. His work with the ventriloquist. I mean, come on. The list goes on and on. Bruce Timm is one of the reasons that I started to love comic books as a kid. And he's forever going to be remembered for that in my mind, and that's why he goes on my list as number one, no question. All right, Sean.
All right. I am going to go with the king, Jack Kirby.
Kirby.
There are so many artists that are influenced by Kirby. There are so many concepts that Kirby created to this day that still haven't seen the light, that still, like, transcend, like, you know, meta mm-hmm. for comics. You know, dude, like when he created Fourth World, he was on some other stuff, okay? Let's be real. He was on some other stuff when he created Fourth World, because there are still to this day some concepts in Fourth World I'm like, what?
Yeah.
You know, but you know, I mean, his days at Marvel and his days in DC, where he just like blew up the DC universe with all these, you know, great concepts and everything, and all these characters he helped create from the ground floor. And not only that, but people forget that dudes like Kirby and Gil Kane and Alfredo Acala, they also worked with animation studios to like, you know, to help build concepts for a ton of the Ruby Spears stuff in the 80s and, you know, even some Hanna-Barbera stuff. They were like heavy into it. But, you know, Kirby's king, man. Without Kirby, just like with Stan Lee, without Stan Lee, you don't have comics. Without Kirby, you don't have comics.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm doing a man justice, you know, because I haven't said that much about him. I mean, the man is a legend.
Yeah, well, he restarted things. You know, he injected soul into comic books.
Yes.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Really, he used performing enhancing soul devices?
Yes, he totally did. And speaking of performance enhancing drugs, Raph, it's your turn.
Well, yeah, I refuse to have a Mount Rushmore without Kirby. So I was gonna go in order of the presidents, but screw it. Kirby, aside from the death of Superman, my first comics that I can remember and the Ohatmus I bought the first Marvel Masterworks trade of Avengers. So after Death of Superman, after Official Handbook of the Marvel Universe, my first comics were Jack Kirby and Stan Lee, which is fairly rare in the 90s because, you know, everyone is talking about Image and what's going on with the X-Men. At that point, Claremont, I think, was still writing it, or maybe Lobdell. But Kirby influences, I mean, not just as an artist, but as a creator, he's influenced so many people that I like and respect. And, you know, I mean, he created Captain America.
Yep.
When comics were dying, he was working on all the major genres that were still selling, like romance. He brought back, you know, the superhero age in Marvel. He created those funky, crazy, I don't know how to understand how he did that without drugs, fourth world guys. I mean, he has done so much. Even before I became a serious comic book fan, I knew who Kirby was, and so I mean, everyone talks about Kirby, and to have that sort of legacy, how could you not include a person like that? Yeah. It's impossible. Mm-hmm. It's like Mount Rushmore, and then like the Mounter Rushmore, and that's where he is.
Nah, it's true. I mean, that's kind of why, I'm just going to get my second out there already and just say that it's Jack Kirby, because I think we all have to include him on this list because we do him injustice to not have him on there. So he's my second pick. I'm not even going to bother explaining it because it's the truth. So we'll move on to Mr. Pryor's second pick.
My second pick is George Perez.
I think all of our lists are going to be kind of similar here. Continue.
I'm going to make son of a building block. It's Woody.
It's Perez, man. Go get Crisis on Infinite Earths. Go get that Absolute Edition and understand why this man, you know, is just eloquent when it comes to detail and drawing as many superheroes as he can in a panel. And you can tell who each superhero is without any issues. The man is a fantastic artist. He's just beautiful. It's Perez. This man is the reason I bought DC Comics.
Yep.
I remember just reading Marvel, and then I finally got Crisis after Crisis was, you know, finished. And I bought the 12-issue mini, and I started reading reading through every single issue again and again and again and again and again. And the artwork was so beautiful. Yeah, and the story is mad cool, but the artwork is just beautiful. And, dude, like, I burned through two copies of each issue of Crisis. Mm. Okay, that's how much I read. I read it until the pages fell off.
Sweet. So
that's, you know, so that's the kind of mark he left on me as a, you know, he leaves on me as an artist. Mm-hmm. So if it wasn't for him, I would have never read DC Comics ever.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean that's, and like I said, man, his work is legendary. That of, you know, his last Avengers run was fantastic. Hell, I had so much fun, you know, looking that over. So, you know, and like people forget that period of time where he did like Fantastic Four way before Byrne showed up.
Yep.
I think he was inked by Joe Sinnott, but even then that was still tight.
Didn't he also do some X-Men issues?
I can't remember.
Okay.
That I cannot remember, all but right. I just know any book of his I bought, even like as far as like between like the big two, Marvel and DC, and even some of the stuff with CrossGen. It's awesome. It's beautiful. Oh,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can't go wrong. So he's number two.
Preach. All right. Raph.
Yeah, so I realized that I said Joe Shuster before when it came to the writers. He's actually the artist of Superman. He was the main artist of Superman, and Jerry Siegel was the writer. And here's my thing, and this is why I'm picking this guy. Like, Joe Shuster was a great artist, but his is not the Superman I think of the most when I look at Superman. The one and he's not just known for Superman. The guy I'm picking is not just known for Superman, but he's a big Superman fan, and he's done some great work with Superman. It's Alex Ross. I mean,
all right.
Ross is, I think of all the artists that I can think of, you know, he does the painted style and he's also done he's known as the watercolor guy, but he's not just a watercolor. I mean, the pencil work he did for the Kingdom Come Superman one shot, that was great. And then he's had those works with Jim Lee where he painted over Jim's pencils. Ross's art, I think, for the 90s was the most iconic. Even though there are other artists you can name that probably did bigger stuff in the 90s, but I mean, between Marvels and Kingdom Come, I really doubt it. I mean, mm-hmm. Ross's art, obviously it's much more realistic than regular comic book art because he paints it, but there's such a power of movement and like, I don't know what it is with the guy, but he chooses the most iconic poses for everyone. Like when in Kingdom Come, when Superman comes back, he's carrying some of the wayward heroes, but he's also like just posed in the air, and it's sort of you can hear like the John Williams score in the background, and the Superman's back, and then like he knows his superheroes, he cares about his superheroes, and he knows what to do with them. I don't know if I necessarily like what he does now, but I definitely I read Kingdom Come pretty early on, and That's one of my favorite stories of all time. So I've got to put Ross in the list.
It's enough to put him on there.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. All right, over to Sean.
John Romita Jr.
Ooh, good one.
Spidey. Mm-hmm. Daredevil.
Yep.
When I started reading Daredevil, John Romita Jr. was doing pencils. Mm-hmm. That's my Daredevil.
Kick-ass.
Yeah, kick-ass too. Yeah, beautiful pencils. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful artwork, mm-hmm.
First X-Men comic I ever picked up, quite possibly first comic book I ever picked up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot all the see. That's absolutely right. And that was the X-Men team that I'm sure a lot of people thought would never succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you mean Sykes not on the, you know, what do you mean Sykes off the team?
Yep.
What do you mean Wolvie, Storm, Colossus, Kitty Pride, and Storm? Nightcrawler, what? Huh?
Yeah.
Why has Storm got a mohawk? Rogue, really?
Yeah.
Rogue in the green sweatsuit outfit with the hood, really?
Come on,
Joe. That is still to this day one of my favorite runs.
Yep.
So yeah, man. Yeah. See, these are people that their catalog of work is not only is it massive, but page for page is purely outstanding. You know, I never saw a lazy John Romita Jr. You know, I mean, we've all seen artists that are talented, but they've had that lazy day or had that bad day. I've never seen it with that cat.
Yep.
So
yeah, it's true. I mean, he might do square jaw, but I think the motion and the personality in the art certainly makes up for square jaw.
Yes.
I'm going to go with a man who died long before his time, and I think that if he were still around today, he would probably be even more influential than he was while he was around. And I'm talking about Mr. Mike Waringo.
That's a good one right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
And not just because he died, but because his Flash and his Fantastic Four are quite possibly the most iconic images of those two comic books when I think of them. Because the motion... And, like, he made the Flash feel fast, you know, he created the whole like speed effect that really gave the like the lightning bolts that he used and the red speed lines and everything actually made me feel like he was going to jump off that page and run into my room and then run back onto the page and go fight somebody. You know, that's how epic that was. And his style was so clean and so easy to read. And his characters, even though he drew little lines, like with few lines, but every single character had a distinct personality. That's what was so great about Mike. And his Wally West was it wasn't the first Wally West that I read, but it was the best Wally West that I read when it came to art. No question about it. I mean, Scott Collins is just a close second, but he is that Flash. And the Fantastic Four that he did with Mark Waid, I don't care what you say, that is the best Fantastic Four ever. Right there.
That art is dope.
No question, man. No question. I mean, when the Fantastic Four met Kirby up in heaven, I mean, they were close to tears in my eyes right there. Mm. And his thing? Oh my God, his thing.
That's what she said.
Shut up. his Benjamin J. Grimm. There, that's better. His Benjamin J. Grimm didn't have nearly as many scales as many people draw him with. But you felt like this was a suffering guy that had come to terms with the fact that he was going to be orange for the rest of his life. But he had humor, he had strength, and he had heart. And
yep.
And that's all you need to draw a good thing. Shut up, Raph. Don't even bother.
Captain Planet or John Boehner.
Anyway, Human Torch as well was great. The bendiness that he gave Reed, the way he drew Sue also when it came to being invisible was great. And beyond that, I would do him a disservice to not even mention his Spider-Man, because the Spidey work that he did was so damn good and so fun, and the comic book world misses him so much. I miss him so much because he had so many more things to draw that he'll never get a chance to, and I think he'd be probably one of the cornerstones in the Marvel Universe or maybe even the DC Universe right now if he were still around. And
no, most definitely.
Yeah, so yeah, I got to put Michael Ringo on that list, no doubt. No doubt about it. All right, back to Raph.
Okay. All right. I'm gonna go blast from past. I'm gonna go with John Byrne, okay. Because he worked on so many important books. I mean, he rebooted Superman for the modern era before they rebooted him again and again.
Yeah, for the modern era, and then they rebooted him for the modern era, and then they rebooted him for the modern era.
But, between that and his work on Fantastic Four and his run on X-Men with Claremont, I mean, how could you... I mean, up until recently, he hadn't done a bad book. Except maybe Spider-Man Chapter 1 and everything that's come since. But, I mean, the guy, his imagery was great. I mean, I loved how he drew Superman flying. I mean, he introduced angles that I didn't really... Well, I mean, I was like 12, but he did a lot with Superman that I hadn't really seen before. And even though this is going back into the past, like at that point it was what, 11 years. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it was, and even his X-Men. I mean, it's the Dark Phoenix saga. I mean, those are some of my favorite. A lot of my favorite stories from before 1990 are John Byrne drawn. So I mean. Mm. I can't think of anyone else from before then that's as influential aside from maybe Kirby, and
that's Kirby. Really, just stop with Kirby because that's it.
Well, Perez.
Yeah, and Perez
and right. Romita.
Yeah,
but but yeah, the point was made by my awkward silence, my pregnant pause.
That's fine. That's fine. We get the point there, sir.
Wikipedia, comic timing.
and number four, Mr. Sean Pryor,
Bob Layton.
Ooh, whoa! You know, I wasn't expecting that.
The man that helped put the stamp on Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
The tramp stamp,
not the tramp stamp, fool.
The drunk stamp.
You can say that if you could definitely say that. But you know, when you think about Iron Man for like the longest time. The you know, as far as the design and look, Bob Layton had a strong influence on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like there are like three Iron Man artists to this day, for me, that you say Iron Man, Bob Layton, Mark Bright, and Luke McDonnell. Those, you know, because like I grew up with that. That's the Iron Man I grew up with in the 80s and early 90s.
Yeah.
Where we, you know, were by those artists. And they left their mark. But Bob Layton's Iron Man is like the most iconic as far as look goes. And I was just a big Bob Layton fan. When I was a kid, I wanted to draw like Bob Layton. Okay. So, and not only that, but, you know, I remember getting an issue of Power Man and Iron Fist number 67. And it was written by Bob Layton, but like I thought he drew it, so I picked it up. This is how influential Layton was for me as a kid. I saw it and I picked it up the cover and I opened up the inside and I saw Bob Layton's name, so I bought it.
Nice.
So because I thought he drew it, but then when I got home and I finally looked at it, it was written by Bob Layton, but it was actually penciled by Cary Gamble, who I also dug because I'm a big Cary Gamble fan too, but not to the extent of Bob Layton, but you know. I think people slept on his pencils. People, you know, also sleep on his inks. I remember when, this is like way back when, the Huntress, because this was like Earth 2 Huntress, and she had a backup in, I forget which book. I can't remember which book, this DC book this was back then, but she had her own book, and it was actually penciled by Joe Staton. Mm-hmm. But the Bob Layton inks, like, took Staton's work to new levels. And there were sometimes I'm like, is this Byrne? No, it was Bob Layton inks over those Staton pencils that just made it off the chain.
Yep.
So yeah, man, like Bob Layton is my dude, still is, you know, to this day, because I can't think of Iron Man without thinking, you know, Bob Layton. I can't think of another perfect example. Who stepped in on Secret Wars issues 4 and 5?
Mr. Layton.
There you go. And you know, from my other homie, Mike Zeck. You know what I'm saying? So So yeah, man, Bob Layton is iconic to me. So that's why that dude is on my Mount Rushmore. Yeah. And like, there are tons of artists out there, man. But like, those are the ones that like stick in my head.
Oh yeah, no, he gave a consistent look to Iron Man, and we wouldn't have the current armor without him.
Exactly.
Yep. All right, Raph.
My last one is, I was thinking, I want to go with Jim Lee just because he's. He does such iconic imagery. But you know what? I'm going to go with someone who means a little more to me personally. And this is a man who edits the Draw magazine right now, but he also happened to create the looks for two of my all-time favorite characters. Yes, that's right. The artist is Mike Manley, and the characters are Darkhawk and Azrael. Without Mike Manley...
I was wondering if you were going to go there. I really did. Like when I considered doing this Mount Rushmore thing, I was wondering if you were going to go there, Raph.
Without Mike Manley, I would not have this huge mad boner for superheroes with armor on. Without Mike Manley, there is no Darkhawk, who is the greatest hero that no one cares about.
Watch how you pronounce that, by the way.
Darkhawk. Without Mike Manley, we wouldn't have gotten Azrael, the coolest armored hero with flaming swords in his freaking gauntlets that no one cares about. How awesome did he look with his hoodie and his armor and his flame swords?
Now, was he also responsible for the Azbats design?
I think he might have been. And you know what? To be fair, to a historical purist, they're probably listening to this and vomiting all over the floor. And I'm sorry about the cleanup, and I'm sorry about the smell. But to an 8-year-old kid who likes armor and who likes metal things blowing each other up, god damn, those things look awesome. I mean, seriously, a dude with like metal wings that could like slice through anything and like a laser blasty chest thing. Come on! Come on! Mike Manley.
See, now I wish I could pick a Kyle Rayner artist to throw on there, but I don't...
Daryl Banks.
Yeah, Daryl Banks was pretty damn good, but I just can't do it. I just can't do it. I'm sorry. I can't put him on there. I can't. I'm trying to, but I can't. Hell, I could even put Dale Eaglesham on there if I wanted to, because his Kyle... artwork with with Judd Winnick for a while there was pretty damn good. But I think I'm going to pass on that. I think when it comes to iconic artists, you know, I haven't really picked a Superman artist yet. And I think I'm going to have to go with Frank Whiteley.
Oh.
Quite frankly.
Yeah. Quite frankly, I'm going with Frank Whiteley. Because his pencils made All-Star Superman that much more special.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
Yeah.
I
do too, except one minor gripe.
What?
That issue with on the cover where Superman's holding the world in his hands, Superman's neck is like 2 feet tall.
Yeah, but you know what? You know what?
I can get past
it. I can let it slide.
I can let it slide too because I love the series, but every time I look at it, I'm just like, oh, he does look a little alien.
I don't even like his... I mean, I'm not even that big a fan of his faces.
Oh, his faces are like pudgy and doughy.
But everything else about the artwork makes it for me. You know, it's the poses. It's the shadowing. It's the... I don't know. It's just like it just has an iconic feel to it.
It has major iconity.
Yes, it does actually, and especially the Batman and Robin stuff that he did. I mean, oh my God, this man actually made me care about Dick Grayson in a Batman outfit. Okay, because like it was slash in a pan. I you know, everybody thought that like, oh, this is gonna happen for 6 or 7 issues, and then Bruce will be back, whatever. But he. Him and Grant Morrison as a team made that book matter and count in the DC universe, and it's because of that that they changed their mind on who was going to be Batman, and now it's everybody. You know, Dick Grayson is still going to be in the outfit because of Batman and Robin, and because of the Batman titles, and because of how good they were, and you can have Frank Whiteley to thank for that. We three. I mean... One of the saddest titles that I have ever read, as was brought up on, you know, when talking about Grant Morrison as a writer, but the artwork in that is so on point. I mean, you feel for the dogs and cats so much, and it's all because he gave those animals personality. You know, every single one of them. And I just you can't help but put him on a Mount Rushmore list for stuff like that, and the covers that he does, except for giant neck, make comic books want to be read.
Bike Club, yeah, that was one of my favorites.
Yeah,
no, definitely, no, I agree with you, man. I mean, it's one of those things where when I first read Quietly, it was in The Authority. And when I first saw it, it's kind of off-putting. But the more I got into it, the more I dug it. And the more I dug his style. And, you know, for like the longest time, All-Star Superman was like my favorite Superman book in ages.
Mm-hmm.
So, and his artwork definitely leaves a mark. Yeah, I can understand some people say that they think his faces are suspect and stuff like that. You know, to each their own. But, yeah, Quietly's a good one.
Yeah, you don't have to be photorealistic to be good. You know, and yeah, his faces might be a little bit, you know, weird and alien at times, but it doesn't matter to me as long as the artwork has emotion, and his does. All right, well, I think that just about covers it here. That's everybody's 4 in both of those, and we learned more about Sean Pryor and his upcoming awesomeness out of Action Lab Entertainment. And once again, we're sponsored by DCBS, Discount Comic Book Service. Check it out at dcbservice.com. Invincible Iron Man, number 500.1, not 0.2 or 0.3, is 50% off for $1.49. It's a full 32-page book out of Marvel that, for some reason, is 500.1 instead of issue 501. I won't pretend to explain it. I'll just smile and nod. Young Justice number 1, 50% off for $1.49, regular price of $2.99. It is the beginning of a new Young Justice book. I like Young Justice. The first 2-hour movie that they had was really, really good, so hopefully this comic will be just about as good as that. With Art and Franco and Mike Norton, how could you go wrong, really? And Garth Ennis, Jennifer Blood number 1 is 75% off.
And so will issue 2 as well. That will also be 75% off. And then 3 and 4 will be 50% off out of DCBS. Written by Garth Ennis with art by Adriano Batista. So fun times to be had. 75% off for 99 cents. And use the promo code CT8 to get an additional 8% off on your first order with Discount Comic Book Service, DCBService.com. We thank them for supporting Comic Timing and for supporting PKD Media and Action Labs as well. Any final words, Mr. Pryor?
Yes, thank you to everyone that listened to this episode. And if you want to know more about Action Lab Entertainment and our Kickstarter fundraiser for Fracture Issue 1, go to actionlabcomics.com or kickstarter.com and go in the search header and type Action Lab. And if you want to, you know, see some of the stuff that, you know, I've done beforehand, before participating in Action Lab Entertainment, hop on over to pkdmedia.com and we'll take care of you there too.
And many, 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 many podcasts to be found at the PKD Media site as well.
Yes, the PKD Black Box, which is a pop culture and a comics podcast hosted by yours truly, as well as Tales from the Attic, hosted by Donnie Salvo, where Donnie Salvo hops into his long box of comics to tell you a tale of said comic. And the Carol Chronicles, which pops up every now and then. He talks to you a little bit of everything. So there you have it. And those podcasts can also be found on one feed in iTunes and the PKD Black Box.
Awesome. And where in the storage locker is the beer episode at this point?
The beer episode actually will post actually before this episode posts.
Cool.
The beer episode will air as of November either 10th or 11th.
Fantastic. Very cool.
Yes, sir. The title of that episode is tentatively called "Get Your Wookiee Out My Beer."
Nice. And maybe someday that Mutant X conversation will make the light of day.
Yeah, it will. Like I said, I've still got odds and ends to put together.
I love getting on you about that.
Oh, I know you do. I'll let you run with it. It's all right.
It's all good, man. It's all good. You know I love talking to you, man, and I love being on episodes, and I can't wait to be on Black Box again. That's always fun because I just get to just, like, get it all out there. Like, I don't have to worry about editing the show at the end. That's your job.
Exactly. I got my work cut out editing all of you guys together. So for the latest episode, but it's definitely worth it.
All right.
And, you know, but in all seriousness, thanks, man, for, you know, to you and Raph for having me on the show tonight and for just being supportive of what we're trying to do here.
Hey, man.
And, you know, I honestly can't say thanks enough.
I put my money in, and I put my money where my mouth is, man. So that's...
Ew.
Shut up.
Thank you for being a friend.
That and congratulations to us for being done with the podcast before midnight for once.
Woo!
Yeah.
Mr. Suhu, you want to pimp your wares at all?
Well, I don't know if it's going to happen by the time this episode comes out, but the Geeks Unite Network has folded. It's just going to become Raphcast. So you can find the feed at geeksunite.libsyn.com. Yes, I'm too lazy and too cheap to get a new feed. And you can it also will be available at the blog, raphradia.wordpress.com. First episode would have been about what I've been up to and video games and all that, but considering there's a fire in my freaking apartment and I can't get to it, maybe I'll have to re-record something else.
Well, is it mostly just going to be a solo cast, or will you occasionally have other people on?
I will occasionally have other people on, but as we all know, the show is about me.
That's true. You know, you should just name your podcast Vaporware.
Yeah, I totally should.
I mean, yeah, I would say name it Duke Nukem Forever, but that's actually coming out.
I know, seriously.
Oh, really now?
Yeah. It got revived for like the 17th time.
This is the StarCraft ghost of podcasts.
It'll apparently be out by the beginning of next year.
Whatever year you're actually in.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah, all right. Well, this episode is long done, so let me just...
tell everybody that the email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Remember, you can check out the forums over at comicforums.com. Graciously hosted by the Comic Geek Speak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. We're proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com and the League of comicbookpodcast.com. Check us out at comicbooknoise.com/league. Please send us your iTunes reviews on iTunes. Graciously appreciated. And go to the Comic Geek Speak podcast forums to find the rest of the Comic Podcast theme event peoples. Eventually, there will be a website, I believe, for them all. But for now, they're probably going to wind up and be listed in this very post. So check that all out. And once again, Sean, always a pleasure. And I can't wait to see you at Super Show.
Almost definitely. Looking forward to seeing you. The rest of you guys at Super Show as well. Just try to keep Draft calm for the next few months, man. And, because you know he's a ball of energy when he gets to Super Show. So, you know, he has a tendency to, like, hit the middle of the floor and start running in place on the floor. So.
Yeah, we actually have a wanted sign up at all the coffee shops just to ensure that he doesn't actually get any caffeine in him.
18 Red Bulls a day keeps I don't know what away.
Yeah, please keep him. We'll keep him more than that.
Yeah, keep away here, please. and Raph, thanks for sleeping on my couch.
Oh yeah, nothing like crashing on. See, I am the Dupree in the you and me.
And as always, there's always time for comics. Oh my God, it's over.
Congratulations, Brent.
Yes, that is actually my rap name, so that works.
The Funkiest Jew. You know what? There's a sound bite that was a song that Chubb Rock made years ago that, like, he at least talking about all these dudes on his crew, and one of them he nicknamed the Funkiest Jew. I will find that and put that in a loop and send it to you one day.
And that'll be his introduction.
That's yeah. that I don't know what are the say thank you or to say why.
That's what I do, sir. That's what I
do. Trying to grab their Rosa and put them in the right. I'm totally
go directly to jail.
Yeah. That was the worst analogy I was making there, so I'm totally going to cut that out and make something better right now. There we go.
It's it's superhero stuff. It's superhero. It's womp womp.
You there, man? We seem to have lost you. Nope. Hold on. Will we try to get the call back?
Now a message.
This is a new feature here with Skype. It's actually waiting to try and get the call back.
And now a message from Brent Cassino.
Hi, I'm Brent Cassino.
Don't do
if
it.
If you like
don't,
testicles, don't get mad.
Don't do it, man.
Congratulations, Brent. I hope you have a lovely wedding, and I hope you guys are happy for years and years on, and really, I hope the best for you, too.
All dropped.
By the balls.
Fires the internet to get back. He's been having trouble with the internet the past couple days.
You mean prior to this?
I see what you're doing there.
Mr. Black President.
You know, that man is in his wedding rehearsal sitting in the last pew sleeping right now.
he had his food tasting the other day, and he's like, oh, my stomach is so full right now.
Oh, he's in a food coma. That fool going to be in a food coma for like 3 days.
Oh, yeah. Well, as long as he gets out of it in time to pick me up at the goddamn airport on Wednesday.
You're going to Frank Miller Airport?
Yeah, I'm going to Frank Miller Airport. It's great. It's actually entirely black and white, and everything's a little sketchy.
No, you should have Brent edit this. Seriously, Brent, have a great wedding. And years and years of happiness for both of you. Please. Please. I honestly want this, even though I sound like a facetious dickhead right now. I really do. I wish you the best. On your podcast. On this. Your podcast wedding.
Please stop.
I don't know what it is.